Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, July 6th, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up in our scripture reading. We left off last Monday. We left off. We read chapter 12 of Romans.
We're reading from the book of Romans, chapter 12. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. For I say through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. For as we have many members in one body, and all members have not the same office, so we, being many, are one body in Christ, and every one members one of another, having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, whether prophecy, let us prophesy, according to the proportion of faith, or ministry, let us wait on our ministering, or he that teacheth, on teaching, or he that exhorteth, on exhortation, he that giveth, let him do it with simplicity, he that ruleth, with diligence, he that showeth mercy, with cheerfulness, let love be without dissimulation, abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good, be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor, preferring one another, not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patience in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer, distributing to the necessity of saints, given to hospitality. Bless them which persecute you. Bless and curse not. Rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. Be of the same mind one towards another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estates. Be not wise in your own conceits. Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourself, but rather give place unto your wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemies be hungry, feed him. If they thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. That was the book of Romans, chapter 12.
Okay, coming through, testing, coming through okay? Okay, I guess I am. Can anyone hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, John.
Okay, thank you, Jan. Okay, it's July 6th. We're into July. We've been dealing with that Chinese export for quite some time, and And I think it's pretty much coming to an end. I think by the end of July, we should be totally out of the woods. Probably totally out of the woods right now, but with all the fake news, we're still having some problems in certain areas. Problems with fake news, that is. But people now, now is a time, really, we speak about this all the time. It's serious now that we really have to become educated. I think things are about to really break open soon. And when they do, and the smoke clears, there's going to be a lot of vacancies of power, power vacancies, shall I say. There's going to be a void. And we, the people, need to fill that void. But first of all, we have to understand how to fill that void and how to recognize that void. Because if we don't, then someone else will fill it and we won't even know it because we'll be just right back eventually from where we were trying to get away from. So we, the people, have to take up the authority. We have to take up the power. We have to have and return government to a government by the consent of the people. Of course, that's what National Liberty Alliance is all about, to teach people how to have government by consent. So we're looking for a lot of people. We need a lot of people to fill a lot of positions across this nation. Every county at some point in time needs to get engaged, the people within the county. We don't need, you know, thousands and thousands of people in every county, but we need some people in every county. And eventually, as time goes on, hopefully we will get thousands of people in every county filling up the militia roles and so on. We do have a plan, and on nationallibertyalliance.org, if you go to our website and under People's Duty, click on Organize Your County, and you can read the plan and exercise and execute that plan within your county. Organizing your county begins with really just one person deciding to do something and meeting with another and then with another and with another. When you get about 4 to 6 people, that's when you really have to want to start to get some meetings going. But before we talk about that, you know, we do have a lot of positions open for grand jury administrators. We have 15,000 positions that's going to be open. Generally, there's about, about 3,000 counties. Some counties, you know, are very rural, and we wouldn't really have much going on in that, but they would be going on to the county next door maybe to deal with the courts or whatever the cases may be. But in any event, let's say about 3,000 counties. We need 4 people in every county to take on the job of an administrator, a jury administrator. So that's 12,000 people. We're figuring about 15,000 across the nation in order to take on all the positions because some counties are highly populated and will need more than 4 people. But generally speaking, 4 people is the standard. The rule comes really ultimately from the Magna Carta, 1216. 15 or 16? I think it's 1215, right? The Magna Carta talks about 4 individuals dealing with problems and setting things right. And that's the job we're looking for people to fill. These positions are paid positions. There'll be a career position. And so there will be a paid position with benefits and so on. You'd be working within the courthouses themselves, and the job is really ultimately orientating the juries, grand jury and petit juries, and dealing with problems when people call in. You know, we want to open the doors of access to the juries from the people themselves. We're also looking to work to train the sheriffs to approach and deal with the juries. History shows that, generally speaking, lawyers should not have access to the grand jury. That's not how we see it in history, going back in the common law. And it's generally the sheriff, and it can be, of course, the coroner also, but generally it's the sheriff. If the U.S. attorney has a problem and would like to bring some information to the attention of a grand jury, because they maybe uncovered some criminal activity, then they should have to report that to the sheriff. Got to think that out a little bit with the federal level, but I can't see any other way to get around it. It really goes back to the county level, no matter how you do it, because whether they claim it's a federal crime, and there are situations where there can be some crimes that the feds would be involved with in the federal level, but most crimes are dealt with on the state level within the counties. And so it's within the county where the criminal activity took place, but generally speaking, is where the trial would be held, and that would be the jurisdiction. And but even in a federal court, if they were to bring some charges against people, which should be very, very rare, extremely rare, because generally speaking, their business ultimately is mostly dealing with commercial activity, commercial fraud, maybe trafficking, drug trafficking, sex trade trafficking, different things of that nature, and of course other equity situations dealing with agencies, of course in this case federal agencies, and then of course they can be held liable to statutes and codes that they have to be operating underneath. But as far as the people is concerned, generally speaking, the federal government has no jurisdiction over the people to charge the people with a crime. You know, people have been charged with crime maybe for having a weapon and crossing a state line or something like that. That's not a crime to begin with, of course. But generally speaking, you know, they get involved in different things for whatever reasons. Usually it's political reasons. It's maintaining the status quo, maintaining power, maintaining control, getting rid of their enemies, you know, just many, many things. Of course, the IRS is a major problem with dealing with going after people into the federal courts. But properly run, it's got to come down to the county no matter how you get it. Even if the case was a criminal case that took place in a federal courtroom, even if that was the case and you have a U.S. attorney that's prosecuting, well, still the crime that they're claiming that takes place would take that took place would be taking place in some county. And therefore, within that county is where the jury of their peers would be, drawn from. And so you come back, you still come back to the situation where the sheriff has to approach the jury and bring the crime to the jury. And it could be done in a federal court. Again, within that county, the administrators would collect different names of individuals to qualify them for the grand jury for an indictment, and maybe be seated in a federal court. I don't see the necessity of that. That could be done in the state court or within the county. But the trial, of course, would have to take place in the federal court, being that it's a federal issue. And again, that's rare. Very rare. One night we'll get into more detail on that. I know Brent has talked about the very minimum authority that the feds have on the people as far as trying to go after people for a crime. So anyway, it still has to go through the sheriff for the purpose of bringing it to the grand jury. And if an indictment is received, then it would be brought, of course, into the federal court if it is a federal issue, and again the people within the county, or at least within that federal district, but I would imagine within the county where the individual is, would be drawn the necessary individuals for a trial jury. So anyway, we need people to take those positions right now. The judge and the federal prosecution in the federal courts, or the judge and the prosecutors in the state courts, control that whole process. Never, ever, ever was that ever meant to be. It's outside of common law knowledge. It is not part of common law in any way. It must be the sheriff or the coroner. In other cases, which may not be necessarily criminal cases, where people might want to come to the jury, the grand jury, because they're making a complaint. If it's a criminal complaint, then we should assist that person to get access to the sheriff, for the sheriff to then evaluate that, get the sworn statement, the sworn affidavit, if he deems it fit as a crime, and bring it in before the grand jury looking for an indictment. And, of course, it's not necessarily the sheriff himself of that county, although, of course, it could be. It's the sheriff's office, ultimately, people, individuals trained for that purpose. And, of course, they should have access to an attorney of their choice. Maybe that could be the county attorney, providing that county attorney has some education in the common law. But outside of that, a common law lawyer, as far as advice, is what is needed by a sheriff, and also the administration for the grand jury, or the grand jury itself, of course, access to a lawyer, a common law lawyer. So basically, that is the job. And of course, if there are situations where there's a complaint against an individual, maybe a bureaucrat that's abusing their powers in some way, refusing to give someone information, or giving them access to something that they should be able to have access to, or some problem. It's not necessarily a crime, but an abuse. That's where the administrators would get more involved into it on a personal level to make the phone calls to deal with that problem and cut it off. And, of course, if they can't repair it, then they could bring it to the grand jury for consideration to be brought into a civil court on behalf of the individual that's being abused by the bureaucrat. Some of these things and little details we're kind of still working out, but generally speaking, that's how it should run. So we're looking to fill those positions. So right now we have, 1,190 grand jury administrators. And as I say, we need about 15,000. So anybody looking for a job, come click on the buttons, should be able to, I think it's under grand jury. Here it is, become a grand jury administrator. You click on that and you get information and instructions on how to do that. And then once you do that, you'll need to be taking the courses. You'll need to take our civics course and our militia course and our government by consent course. And we may work out another course, but definitely we've written books, handbooks, and we're written on a basic administrator handbook, grand jury handbook, trial jury handbook, and we're going to be working on a more in-depth day-to-day detail type handbook for people who are administrators to assist them through the process and what their job duties are and as far as what it is, the things that they need to know. And anything we miss, of course, we'll be here at National Liberty Alliance for advice and to, solve problems that people are unsure how to deal with it. And then, of course, list those things for other people to learn from also. If we don't have the answer, of course, we'll go research it and we'll come up with the answer. But generally speaking, people need to fill these positions. But everybody needs to get involved, and including these individuals that will be taking those positions, they need to be getting involved with a group within their county. They need to organize. And organize in your county, again, we have a plan, which is found on our website under People's Duty, clicking on Organizing Your County. And as I mentioned, once you get 4 to 6 people, you can meet occasionally. You can just make, meet over the phone, over Skype, meet for coffee here or there. But once you get about 4 to 6 people and then you make a plan and then you set a date to have a county meeting and invite as many people as possible to that meeting, and that's where you will introduce the people to the NLA plan. Which we have a video of and different information. But first of all, you want to organize yourself. You want to find a chairman, a co-chairman, a treasurer, and a secretary. And even if you don't have that when you're starting up, you'll eventually get that. But maybe the 6 people, maybe 4, maybe a lot of the 6 people don't want to take those positions, or maybe they'll take them at a temporary you know, time until someone else would replace them. But anyway, we want to structure ourselves, get about six people together, and then you want to find a venue. You want to find a venue that's, you know, reasonable distance equally around the county. Try to find something central in the county, or maybe the northern part of that county is rural or something. So, you know, where the population is, you want to find something reasonable for people to get access to, so nobody has to travel all the way across the county to get to a meeting. You know, it may take an hour for someone to do that, but if you had something more, you know, local, more central, then nobody should be traveling more than a half hour, 20 minutes, or something of that nature. So we want to make it convenient to all. So you want to find a venue. Libraries are one of the best, in my opinion. Town halls could be very, very good. Private clubs, a back room of a bar, restaurant, or a diner is good. There's many, many different places. You know, if you get a gun club involved and the location is good, and they're involved in what you're doing, which they should be, and those are some of the people that should be your targets to bring to this meeting, then, you know, you can have it there or wherever you want to. But you want to invite people, and you want to take some time on this. If you think you need 6 weeks before you can have that meeting, and you can take 6 weeks to go out and visit different organizations, make phone calls, talk to individuals, key individuals in different organizations who will talk with their membership and entice them to come to the meeting. Or even visiting those groups when they're having meetings. And that's something, of course, you would want to do after you set your original up. There's lots of different organizations, I'm sure you'll discover, and they'll be having some meetings on their own from time to time. And you can try to get some time with them to introduce them to the plan, the National Liberty Alliance plan, which ultimately is to truly save the nation. The people must take control. We must educate our children, and that education begins with us. We must begin to become educated. But anyway, you can invite friends, neighbors, co-workers, volunteer fire department, volunteer ambulances, rescue squads, other liberty groups within the county, meetup groups, veterans clubs. Just there's a whole bunch of different places you can contact people and have a good successful first meeting. I mean, a good successful first meeting, you know, if you've got six people and you can bring 20 or more people together, that's a good successful first meeting. Of course, if you're really diligent and you're really working on it hard, who knows how many people you can bring together in your first meeting. Anyway, we laid out certain meeting protocols on how things might want to flow. People have to decide for themselves, but of course, a lot of these things should be planned and worked out. You know, you should have a sign-up sheet where people come in and sign, put the name of their town, you know, their name, the town, their phone number and email. You want to be careful with that, not to allow that list to be gotten out to anyone and not to have that list abused in any way. Usually start off with a prayer, 1 minute or so, nothing big. Pledge allegiance, and as everybody can then take some time, you sit in the chairs and, you know, talk a little bit and start sharing a little information, introducing themselves. While that's happening, you know, you pass the donation can and so on. So anyway, there's a list of things and discussion. You get to the point where you have a discussion, you have a topic for the night. We have a list of subject matter things, and we'll be adding to the subject matter here. But right now, these are the important ones that really we have to address over the course of many months. Each one is an introduction to each one of these things, the committee men, the administration for the juries, introduction to the common law, the difference between law and equity, the militia, the Republic Review, American heritage, and all of these issues. You know, you have a particular subject matter for every meeting. And of course, after, you know, you have that topic is brought forward and people are introduced to it, then you can have a discussion group around that topic. There's other activities that your group would be involved with. You also want to get the sheriff. We're writing a plan on approaching the sheriff, and we should get that up there soon. Anybody starting a meeting, you know, at least 30, even if you've got six people together right away, you'd want to shoot the meeting out about 30 days so that you have enough time to get people involved and get the message, the word out, get as many people involved as possible, and have people have the opportunity to, you know, put it onto their calendar. We'll have a lot of other PowerPoint, we have PowerPoint videos. Right now we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 PowerPoint videos up there at this point. We have videos on these, on all these things too, committee men, common law, equity. Well, some of them we don't have videos on, but we have videos on a lot of this stuff. But we will make them available up there for download for that purpose, for that using that as the subject matter that you're going to learn and teach to others and then have conversation about. In the process of building up our membership, this is where we want to redevelop the militia again and connect with the organized militia to some degree, but really we're looking to connect ultimately building up the unorganized militia. And if there is no regular militia in your county, we need to create that and get that going. There are some counties out there that have, people have already started many years ago, and we want to connect with those people who have already started. Why reinvent the wheel? They've got things going. They know what's happening, and most of those individuals are ex-military and cops and so on. So, again, organizing your county is the key thing to save in America. Organizing your county and taking control of the power is all the necessities. It's necessary in order to save our nation, and the people have to get involved. You know, we have the committee man process, which will control the entire political process, who gets onto the ballot, who doesn't, power and authority to recall when the people get out of control. Just think how many people we could have got rid of over the past months with all this craziness going in, including and specifically governors and mayors, okay? If the committee men were elected and the committee men understood their authorities and powers, these people would be out of office already. They'd just pull them out of office through the power of recall. And, of course, indictments is a possibility, too, if we control the courts. So we need to control the courts through the administrations, the jury administration, and we need to control the political process through the committee men. And the backup and the authority and the power behind it is the militia and the sheriff. Posse comitatus, if necessary, there's your militia that the sheriff can use if necessary. But just forming these things and getting things together and educating ourselves and our children, getting civics back into our schools, which is a project that I've been thinking a lot about, and on some of the things we might do. And one evening we'll talk very specifically about that. But we need to get civics back into our schools. Our children need to learn about our founding fathers right off the bat in first grade. There should be civics course from first grade all the way up until the 12th grade. By the time our children come out of the lower schools, well, the grammar school and the high school, you know, they should be well-founded in their heritage, an understanding of law, understanding of the political process, understanding of much, education, an education that literally teaches our children how to think, not what to think. You know, I talk to kids here or there, you know, you go to McDonald's or something, you order something, a little conversation here or there or something, and, you know, these kids, they don't know anything. They're as dumb as a box of rocks, and it's not their fault. They're not being taught anything, you know. I have a nephew that is still in school, and in a sense, he has a grade. He's in maybe third year high now at this point. And, the garbage they teach him, it's just unbelievable. Teaching them how to be socialists. They don't know who Thomas Jefferson is. They don't know the difference between the Revolutionary War and the Revolution and a Civil War. It's really pitiful. And it's happening right under our nose. And if we the people don't step up and take back control, we're going to be creating a nation of Soviets, a nation of socialists. So anyway, we the people need to take control. We do have a plan. Again, it's up here, very specifically, on organizing your county. We have the framework. People need to take that framework and build upon it. Every county is different. They have different problems, different situations. And so government is all on the grassroots in the county. That's where it's at. That's where the power is, from the committeemen to the administration for the juries and the militia. Of course, underneath people's duties, there's a lot of other things. It gets into very specific, becoming a committeeman, committeeman members in your county, committeeman petition process, committeeman proposed party rules. So everything people need to know and learn about the committeeman is pretty much in those four pages there. So you get an introduction. You have access to a list of other people in the county that are becoming committeemen. And again, if they're not connected to the group, you'll have access to them to call them up and invite them to the group and get them connected and work together to become elected committeemen. And that would do away the existing Republican and Democratic Party, or Democrat Party. Both of those parties would cease to exist once the people take control of the true political powers within those political, well, parties, quote unquote, because the name Republican Party and the Democrat Party belongs to the people, not the private organization that has seized control or on it on a national level. That is controlled on a national level when it should be controlled on a grassroots level, not on a national level. Now, the public review is a very interesting thing. Well, we did talk about that once. Maybe we'll talk about it again in the near future. But the public review is very important. People go out on our page on the public review. We've got some videos out there. They're very short videos. They give you some information on what the Republic Review is all about. And then, of course, the Republican Review argument in bullet point, in bullet format. Once you go through this page, it'll become pretty obvious what this Republic Review is all about. And this needs to be the top thing that the committeemen need to deal with. This is a political problem, and the people can make changes with all these people who are unconstitutional. We need to correct all those problems, and that ultimately is what the Republic Review is all about. And it's the committeemen that need to organize it. It's the committeemen that needs to push it and make sure it goes through the process and we deal with these problems. So again, this is something that it needs to be discussed with the people in your counties on a local level, and form different committees that do different things, and people need, and every individual should become a committeeman at least once in their life. We should teach our children it's their duty to become a committeeman once in their life. It's a two-year thing, about 40 hours a year maximum. I don't think much more than that. Some years less. You know, it's usually on the even years is the biggest one, and there, you know, that you spend more time than anything. In the odd years, there's not that many elections. It's mostly local elections. But generally speaking, it shouldn't be any more than 40 hours a year, and a lot of places less, a lot less maybe. And it's in the evenings, 2 or 3 hours here or there. It's generally around election time, although you'll have a few meetings throughout the year, but basically it's around election time where your activity is. And you'll be meeting ultimately to decide on who you're going to put on the ballot, where these individuals who want to get onto the ballot will come see the committeeman and ask to be put onto the ballot. And you get to test them. You get to find out, do they know the Constitution? What do they know about it? You know, you have the opportunity to send them to National Liberty Alliance to get a further education, especially if they don't know anything about it. But even if they just know some things about it, you send them to NLA, have them come get themselves an education on the consent of government and civics course, and then they come back, and now they have at least the qualifications to be put onto the ballot. And then we put people onto the ballot, and they get elected, You know, we'd be putting lots of people on the ballot. They'd be running against each other, and then eventually one would be chosen, you know, for general election. Primaries will go through a process and then the general election. But whoever gets into office, you know, once they, if they break their oaths, if they start doing things they shouldn't be doing, one phone call should fix and correct the problem, because they owe your job, their job to you. And they, you know, that is the committee man. They owe the job that they're in to the committee man. And so they have to appease the committee man. They have to obey. It's suicide, political suicide, if they deny it, because then they can be brought up for a recall and thrown out of office. And that could be done. It's a 90-day process to do that, which we will lay that process out. We'll get, I don't think we've done a paper on that yet, but we will. There is a process for that. So anyway, everything here underneath the people's duties is where people need to get involved. We got the militia rules for the several states, which should start at the meetings. Again, everybody in that meeting should become part of the militia. Maybe everyone is not capable of carrying a weapon or doing things, but they sure can participate and still be part of the militia and fulfill some use in an emergency. You know, everybody that's in that group should become part of the militia, and we have the militia rules for the several states, which again is a framework for uniformity across the United States. There's a lot that needs to be added to that, but we need to be structured in a uniform way. We're structuring everything we're doing in a uniform way, the committeeman process in a uniform way, the jury process. And of course, the militia process. So, you know, we should be working together in our counties, and we should be able to join county to county or state to state if it's ever necessary. There should be that communication connect. And that, of course, will be done through National Liberty Alliance, which will be here for this whole purpose of continuing to educate, inform, educate anyone who wants to become, you know, a jury administrator in the future. You know, people will retire, quit, whatever. There'll always be positions being filled. People need to be educated and informed to be able to take those positions. And that's what National Liberty Alliance will continue to do, educate the also on the political process, the different jobs and qualifications and jurisdictions of the different elected positions, which a lot, most people don't, I don't know most of it myself. Again, this is something we're researching and we're going to be putting together on our website, where you'll be able to click, put in your zip code maybe, and see who's running for the next election and when the next election is, and what offices are open, what are the qualifications, or what is the job sort of hold, what is the jurisdiction. Whatever it is about that office, that information that people need to understand, and connecting, you know, statesmen, putting statesmen into those positions, people who do know the Constitution, because right now, unfortunately, it seems like none of them know the Constitution. So these are the things we have to do. People need to get involved, and it's now. Now is the time. Now is the time to plan. Anybody looking to connect with other people in your county already, you can get a hold. Francine, do we have the page up yet, or Jan, whoever knows, do we have the page up yet where people can get access to the district leaders? We've broken the nation up into 10 districts, and if you get a hold of your district leader, he'll find out who's active within your state, and maybe within your counties, and connect you. Francine, go ahead.
The page is under construction. I checked, I believe it was over the weekend, and they will find the leaders on that page.
Is there any names and numbers up yet?
Yes, the district
leaders. Okay, there are contact names and numbers right now up there.
Yes.
Okay, so anybody looking, every once in a while I see an email come through the mail and asking, you know, I'm in this county, can I find anybody that's active in this county, and so on and so forth. Well, that's where you go. You go talk to the district leaders, because they're the ones who will know who's active and what's going on. And they're busy working to try to get those people who have joined us in those counties, but are inactive at the moment. We're trying to get everybody reactivated. And of course, it helps really a lot if an individual is in a county and we can connect you with maybe two or three other people, or even just one. Once that little group is going, then the district leader can start making contact with other people in the county and connecting them with, you know, whoever is in their county, and work together to work their groups to get things going. But we have to get active. One of a very important tool, by the way, let me go back here to organizing your county. This I found to be an extremely powerful, powerful tool of organizing, communications. I mean, really, really a great tool. We used this, I found this tool back when Ron Paul was running for president back, I think it was 2007 or 2008. And that was the meetup group. And we used that meetup group into the tea parties and all the way through all of the different liberty groups that I know I've been involved with. We're using that venue, and it's a great, great venue. It's very inexpensive. I think it was costing, goodness, let me think what it was. It was $45 every 4 months or something, and you'll collect more than that in your donations as you send the can around every month. Maybe it wasn't even that expensive. But anyway, meetup.com, okay, great, great place. Yeah, meetup.com, it's an online venue. It's a great tool for organizing and communicating with your grassroots groups. We should use uniform names. So we want to get consistent across the nation. So you should start off with your state abbreviation. You know, in my case, it's NY, New York. Then your county, which would be Dutchess County. So NY, Dutchess County, Liberty Alliance. So New York or NY, Dutchess County, Liberty Alliance. That's what you want to name your group for the meetup. And that'll be consistent if everyone does the same. Again, we want to get as much uniformity as possible. Now, the tools up there are just amazing. You know, people can upload things, upload pictures. You have events. They have, you know, you can put different things up there, different events taking place. There's reminders. There's meeting setups, email reminders of the meetings. People can click the button and get reminder emails, they have a lot of new things up there that I, you know, because I've been out of that for a while, you know, you have your meetings will be up there. You can post certain different things that took place at the meeting, and maybe links to important information for people that have missed out on something. You can upload all kinds of files for all kinds of different reasons and different things. But it is really, really a great, great venue to control the meetup groups and go up to one place and throw the email out, and everybody in the group gets a copy of the email, reminder of the meetings, whatever the case may be. Special event comes up, you can get information out. Emergency comes up, a good way to get information out, and so on. So, again, if we don't do it, nobody does it. We're only going to be back here again. It's only a matter of time. Only the people can save America, and we must have government by the consent of the people. And in order to have a government by consent of the people, it requires your participation. It is your duty as one of the people. All right, I guess that's about it. Jen, do we have any questions or anything?
Yes, I have four questions.
I'm sorry, Jen, did you say no?
I was just prompted that I could ask my question.
Oh, yeah, not yet. Hang on, though. Just hang on a minute. Someone must have hit the button, so hang on a minute, Danielle. Jen, do we have any questions coming in from email? Danny, still with us?
Who? Danielle? Yes.
No, I'm looking for Jan. Jan, are you still there? Hello, Jan. Terry, are you here? Do you know if we have any questions? Or any announcements?
I did not prepare the questions tonight. Jan's been having a little problem with sound, he said, tonight. Okay. Let me see if I can find a few of the questions real quick.
All right. Do you know if we have any announcements also?
I haven't been briefed of announcements.
Okay. Francine, do you have anything you want to bring up?
There's Jan.
Yeah, he's trying to talk, but he's broken up pretty bad. All right, well, anyway, while you're looking for questions, we'll take Daniele. Is that how you pronounce your name, Daniele from Pennsylvania?
Danielle.
Danielle, okay. We'll take your question while we're waiting for Jan and Terry to see if we have any other things going on announcement. But good, you, since you're unmuted already, what's your question or comment?
Okay, thank you. I am in the process of having my aunt's will, a codicil made to my aunt's will, and it's my understanding that I should have her name written in all small letters. I'm just wondering if there is a proper way for me to do it this way out of their whole corrupt system by doing it in small letters, and I don't really know anything beyond that. You know what I mean?
Well, look, you know, I know when I went to school, we had what was called penmanship, and we learned to write that way. And of course, you have capitalization and so on. Write the way you normally write. All these cap letters and all these things, that has nothing to do with us. It does identify with corporations. That is true. But you're one of the people. You use one cap on your first name and spell out the rest. And the same thing on your last name, the middle initial, just like you would normally do. But a lot of people make a lot of things about these capitalization things. It's an argument or a debate or a conversation in the court that we do not want to have, and there's no reason to bring it up. By dealing with those kind of things, we're only empowering the fiction, because the whole process is a fiction. And remember, corporations are a fiction. You know, it's not a real entity. It's a fiction. There's no soul there. So that is a process of, I know business in the commercial process is a cap, you know. So that has nothing to do with you or me. So I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay. I thought by doing it in the capital letters, it means that you're part of the system. She's a dead person, and it's a, all right. Okay.
Well, again, you're falling into the fictional part of the court. You know, 1934, with the Rules Enabling Act that empowered the courts, the Supreme Court, to write their own rules, which the bar wrote the rules, and they were released in 1938 and executed in 1938. And Rule 2 brought us under civil law, and all of that conspiracy and problems that was created, to get the bank going, the Federal Reserve and the people paying into their taxes and all that stuff. All of that has fallen in under that. And USC 26 ultimately is null and void. It has no power or authority. It doesn't belong anywhere. It's repugnant to the Constitution. It's meaningless. Although as long as people think it's powerful, as long as people think it's law, and as long as people respond to it as law, then it's going to have authority over you. But we have to lay it out for what it is. If it's being applied against us, call it for what it is. It's called a fiction, and it has nothing to do with us. It's under civil law. We're under common law. The Constitution is clear, and this is our argument. And this is where we have to be. If we start playing into the game with them, then we're only empowering them. But all of that, a lot of that is going to collapse. And especially USC 26, all that's going to collapse as soon as the deep state is brought to justice, and And I think this is the summer of heat. I think it's going to be happening this summer. It's going to be a hot August, I heard. So
death taxes are not constitutional.
I'm sorry, say that again.
When somebody dies, the government takes 25% of their estate. So there's no way at this point before our new people's government is firmly in to avoid those.
Well, look, you can avoid it in a lot of ways. Just don't get into their probate courts to begin with. Don't, if you have a family argument and a family dispute, go hire yourself an arbitrator. You know, you can actually go.
Yeah,
and there's organizations out there. Do not bring those issues into a court, because once you bring it into the court, that family is going to lose everything, because these are just vultures, thieves, all these lawyers and judges. They're all getting a piece of the action, and they're going to rip you apart like a vulture. They'll take everything you got. So anybody that's got a dispute in their family on these kind of issues, do not bring them into probate court. Do not bring them into the attention of the government. When individuals have a will, okay, and especially, if you're elderly, you want to start to take care of things even before you die, and start putting some of the authorities or control, to your family members, your children, or whatever the case may be. But you've got to keep the government out of this. Now, I do know that I'm pretty sure that Trump did something to get rid of that, which is the death tax. But just don't get lost in their courts. People shoot themselves in the foot by thinking they're going to go into probate court to make their arguments. They're going to lose. Is that where you're at? Are you in a probate court?
No, nothing like that. I wasn't saying that there were any disputes within the family. There's nothing like that at all. I was just saying, when she passes away, is there a way to avoid the fact that the government takes 20%
don't tell them.
Whatever?
First of all, don't tell the government what you have. It's none of their business. It's your personal business, number one. But number two, the IRS is not going to be around much longer. The Federal Bank, the Federal Reserve, has been taken over already. Trump has taken that over. He's got total control over that. And that's going to be done away with. He's moving to the gold and silver standard. And he's hinting towards that actually happening at the beginning of next year. So once we get to that, there is no more IRS. There is no more tax. Those taxes are not taxes. People need to understand every penny that the IRS collects, they can do whatever they want with that money. It has nothing to do with supporting anything. That's their profit, okay? And they just pump out money and print out more, and for do it for pumping out money and printing out more, that's what they get for their quote unquote labor. It's just nothing but what do they call it? A pyramid? What do they call those? Oh, I guess it's called a pyramid.
Ponzi
scheme. Yeah, it's the greatest Ponzi scheme the world has ever seen.
And it pays the interest on the debt. It pays for the money that they print us. It doesn't go for any infrastructure or anything. So basically, it goes into the private corporation called the Federal Reserve and those private bankers. That's what it's going for.
Yeah, I watched a video on that whole process. It was fascinating.
And listen, you could write your mother's name in capital and small letters, and I would do it anyway, because it is true that corporations are identified with all cap letters. So just write it regular. That's all. Not that it has any magic voodoo power, but the fact is they put that caps on everything, and I don't use it. I don't want to use it, and I just don't use it because it's my preference not to. There's whole films on about all the different ways you can sign your name, capitalist, diminutive, and tax, and all these different terms. Does it have any power? Not if they don't want it to. But for me, I don't want to identify with the corporation that they built, around the United States. That's what our problem is. They got this corporate United States that is above the Constitution, so to speak.
Anyway. And if you're in a court case, in a court situation, a situation where you ended up in court, and that kind of thing has any kind of validity or matter to it, then you need to get out of that court, because it's a court that has no jurisdiction over you. And remember, look, There's only one court that has jurisdiction over we the people, and that's a court of law, which is called common law. Law means common law. You go into Black's Law Dictionary, Bouvier's Dictionary, there's two kind of laws. One is called positive law, or also referred to in the Constitution as equity. Okay, that's positive law or equity means it's legislative law, laws that legislators made. But legislators can't make law to control the people. We the people are under the control of common law. You know, so all this traffic violation things and codes and all this stuff that they apply upon the people, you get these code enforcement law, officers, which is the police forces in towns and cities and so on. They enforce all those things. That's all meant for commercial activity. It has nothing to do with us. And so that's where we need to make a break. It's all under civil law. They brought it in the federal courts under civil law, which has gone right down into the state courts, right down into the county. Everybody's under civil law, and that's the same thing as Babylonian law. It has nothing to do with us. It's unjust. You'll never get justice in those courts. It maintains the status quo. And so a lot of those courts where you're involved with all these cap names and all this stuff, and they make a big stink about it, where they put your names in cap on you, you know you got a problem court. But right now, we're only aware of one court that is opened under common law, and that's the one we opened in the Northern District of New York. But it needs to be open in every county across the United States. That's the court of the people, where the people decide. No judge, an untainted jury. No judge telling the jury what the law is. The people make the law, okay? The law is whatever the sovereign says it is, and the people are sovereign. And when 12 individuals sit on that seat as a jury, okay, that's the sovereigns of the court, and they're it's called the king's bench. Those 12 individuals sit on the king's bench, and the king, of course, is nature's God. And we're under natural law. We're to do the will of the king of the court, of nature's law, nature's of God. And so we apply, what we believe is the law. If there's a wrongdoing, we the people can see that, and we can make a decision on that. We can figure out the restitution for that and make sure justice prevails. No political animal belongs in that court making any decisions. There's no judge in that court. There's a magistrate. And there's two sides that make the argument, and at the end of the day, the jury decides. The people. Whatever they say the law is, the law is. If it is something that the government can apply upon that particular individual in that court, and the people don't like it, they think they just think it's evil, it's wrong. Maybe they think it's too strong, maybe whatever. They just don't like it. They nullify it. The sovereign makes the law. That's it. Okay, we're going to do is we're going to see if we got any questions and move on. Okay?
I have a question.
Yeah, John.
All right.
Can you hear me now?
Hold on 1 minute. Someone keeps hitting the buttons for the Q&A. Please don't hit the buttons because we're trying to get into the other things here. We got some business we have to take care of before we get back into Q&A. But since Juliet has come in, we'll take the question real quick. Go ahead, Juliet.
Okay, I have a question about my constitutional rights regarding the mask mandate. I live in Washington State.
Okay. We have to form a different way of looking at this. You don't have constitutional rights. You have unalienable rights protected by the Constitution. So that's where you have to start off. We have to start thinking that way, okay? So the mandates, that I guess, that the governor's putting out or something?
Right.
Or the mayor or something? Yeah. Well, that's not law at all. They don't make the law. You don't have to obey it. Doesn't mean you're not going to get arrested. Doesn't mean they're not going to try to fine you and take you to court and do all kinds of terrible things. It doesn't mean that. Because right now you can't trust what they're going to do about anything. But as far as the true law is concerned, and if you're ready to make that battle and get that, take up that position, that has nothing to do with you. They can look at the governor has the authority to make an executive order that controls only two things, all the political control of that state, for instance, agencies. Okay, so he can put out an executive order, and all the agencies must obey it. Also in commercial activities, okay, you can put out an order and require them to do a certain thing for whatever purpose, of course. And that could be found wrong, too, and decided by a jury and overturned, of course, anyway. But, or even any court can do that. Doesn't even have to wait for a jury. But anyway, as far as the people are concerned, when you're told you have to wear a mask, they can't tell you to do that. Okay? They cannot force you to wear a mask in public places. Just because it's a public place means nothing. Okay, you have the right to go to any place that's a public place, and you don't have to wear a mask. If you believe what's going on is a problem in your area, and maybe it's sensible to wear a mask, but the truth of the matter is the masks in this case don't do anything anyway, because it's not going to hold back a virus. If you cough or sneeze, it's going to go right through that mask.
Right.
If someone coughs on you, it's going to go right through that mask. It's microscopic. It's not going to protect you.
What about an employer or a merchant?
Okay, let me kick in here, John. I've been putting stuff on social media like a maniac. If you look up what the OSHA guidelines are for masks, they're all against the mask. OSHA should have come out and said right away, you're full of crap. We should post it on our site, John. The one guy who's OSHA certified goes through the three different types of masks and tells why they're all useless for this thing. All of them. The N95, when you breathe out, it has vents that let you breathe everything out, so it doesn't stop you from coughing on anybody. It's made for contaminated environments that with poisonous stuff that you don't want to breathe in, and it lets you breathe out. The surgical mask is designed for sterile environments, an operating room. That's it. And it needs to be changed every 20 minutes, because what happens is they clog up with your breath and your moisture, and they become disease carriers, and which goes on to the next mask, which is the cloth mask, which is the worst one because people reuse them, and right away they become clogged and they get mildew, and the viruses that you breathe out breed on that, and you reinfect yourself and you cross-contaminate. Nobody knows sterile procedure. You're taking that stupid mask on and off, and if anybody had a virus, you're spreading it all over the place. So just by OSHA guidelines, they're no good. There's a good website. The woman has lots of links, and she's a lawyer, and she has a legal defense fund, and she gives talks, and she said, listen, if you're an employer, you're a church, and you're making your people wear a mask, and somebody falls down, because the first thing they do is they bring your oxygen very, very low immediately. The cloth ones, you have a hypoxia right away. And she says if somebody falls down in your establishment, your business, or your church and cracks their head on your concrete, there's going to be 30 lawyers from the surrounding ready to take their case. The other thing is there's not too many police enforcing any of this. That's a bunch of baloney, because they know they'll lose in courts. Because any case that makes it to, it hasn't even gone to the Supreme Court. It only gets up to an appeals court, and the judges throw it out. The governors don't have the authority. They have a limited authority for 30 days, and then they can renew it for a reason. Now, right now, today, the World Health Organization just went 360 degrees on the whole mask-wearing thing and whether or not there's a second phase. They backed right off because I think they see the writing on the wall, and they're trying to back up before they get, you know, they're going to be gone after for treason and for misinformation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going on right now. There's new guidelines that the WHO just put out. Now, the WHO changes like the wind blows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one day you have to wear it, the next day you don't. Oh, now they're saying that an asymptomatic person cannot give the virus. Of course, if you put that on Facebook, their fact checkers will put in there, yes, you can, this is misinformation. Well, who's their fact checkers? Who's the Facebook fact checkers? Do you know? It's run by a George Soros organization. They're Marxist, communist people. They have no authority or anything else. They're just there to sow disinformation. So anytime Facebook puts disinformation down, you can be pretty sure that it's the truth. But so there's lots of information on the internet, yes? What?
So you're saying this order that the governor made expires in 30 days, because I work for a school district, and the OSPI made a guidelines that said that we have to wear masks. The children have to wear masks, and teachers have to wear masks.
No, it's unconstitutional. It's unconstitutional, and they can't do it. They can't enforce it.
When they say that, they say, well, they don't have any answers. They told me that if I have a medical condition, I'm supposed to tell my supervisor, which doesn't make any sense to me.
You do have a medical condition. I have a medical condition that precludes me from wearing one. Listen, go to Walgreens and buy the...
It's called the need to breathe. Yeah,
right.
Well, I don't... Look, they can't ask you what that medical condition is because HIPAA says they can't. If I wanted to tell them, I say, yeah, my medical condition that precludes me from wearing a mask is called health.
So if they can't ask me because they told us on the instructions I'm supposed to tell my supervisor and they'll make accommodation based on what you say.
Let me ask you a question. It sounds like you're a school teacher, right?
Yes.
Okay, and they're opening the schools, or the schools open?
The schools will be open in the fall, and they already made all these decisions.
Oh. All right, well, look, you know, do you guys have a union? I mean, you must have a union.
I've already brought up a complaint to the union, but the union basically talks about reimagining education for the fall and supporting Black Lives Matter.
Well, a couple of things. Yeah. By September, this might not even be around anymore. All the people that are involved with all this stuff hopefully will be in jail. Here's the problem that you have, and this is the sad truth, okay? We the people are totally ignorant to our heritage. We're ignorant to our Constitution. We're ignorant to the court system, the process of law, the difference between law and equity. We're ignorant to how the political process truly works. We're ignorant to the jurisdictions that these people have. We're ignorant thinking that we have to be obedient to an executive order or some civil law that they've made up to apply upon we the people. We're ignorant to all those things. And guess what? Being ignorant to all those things, we believe all the lies that they tell us. We believe that reality is what they say it is. And reality is whatever it is that you believe, okay? So it's whatever you perceive. Reality is as you perceive it. So if you perceive that's the law and all these other, then it is the law for you. We have to come above that. That's why we have to educate the people. That's why we've got to get a good education back into our schools, because it's totally destroyed. Here's the thing, okay? If you get the knowledge you need, which you can get on our website, September's coming close, you need to be able to express yourself in court, and you don't have much time to learn. And that's the problem here. You know, people get caught in situations. They find themselves in a legal situation, and then they can't defend themselves because they don't know how to, and it takes time to learn, maybe 6 months or so, to really be able to do something in the courts, write your papers, take your positions, understand how to deal with the problems and how the system works. Or they go get a lawyer and just give up all their money because they're so expensive to begin with. And you're not going to get justice there anyway, because the lawyer will conform to the status quo of whatever the court says it is. And you're going to lose. The only way you can potentially win, and it's not an absolute slam dunk at this point in time, is by knowing the system and battling it. You know, there are successes that are happening, but they're far and in between. And until we get rid of the corrupt courts, you know, we're not going to get any justice. If we can get justice back into the courts, it's a slam dunk. You shouldn't have to pay to go into a court to make a complaint about a situation and fight them in court. You shouldn't have to. I mean, you do have to have a basic knowledge of things, how things work, but you don't need any kind of a bar license or something, or you know, 2, 3, 4. Well, again, we should educate ourselves as much as possible. So can you win in court? Yeah, if you know how to defend yourself and you know how to make the argument, move things from one jurisdiction to another when they abuse you and you're not getting your due process, you move it to another court for cause. If you know how to do all those things, you can potentially win. But if you don't know how to do the things, it's going to be really tough.
Well,
but I don't think that problem is going to be here in September.
I don't think it is either. Look, at there's already precedent. They love precedent, these people. There's already been two state Supreme Court judges in different states that have upheld a suit by people against the governor and threw the case out. Matter of fact, I think it was the governor of, is it Washington State or was it New Orleans? They took away 10 of her executive orders, and they said they were not constitutional. And this is recent. This is in the past month or so. Mm-hmm. And then the one in Illinois is where the governor said, you know, it's ridiculous, you know. Six people can drive in a car to the beach, but six people can't go out in a boat. The same six people catch COVID in the boat, but they won't catch it in the car. And he wrote this wonderful dicta up when he dismissed the case. You know, he dismissed the charges. So I don't think you're going to have to worry about it. They're already losing in the appeals court. They appealed it and they lost. The state appealed it and they lost. So this people are so fed up now, and they're not going to make kids wear masks. Two kids in China, they made them wear masks, and they died in the playground running with masks from hypoxia. I started to tell you that there's a gauge that you can buy, like from Walgreens, that you stick on your finger. Ollie knows all about it because he's on oxygen. He could tell you more. It's about $40. They did a test with 10 people. They put the cloth mask on them, stood them on the steps, and they took their oxygen. And two of them almost passed out. One of them was a runner, a marathon runner, a young woman, you know, in good shape. So it's not that these people had problems. It's that those masks are problems. And this has all been proven. It's all over the internet. Maybe I'll send a link, you know, maybe we can put it up. You can share a screen.
It's all about chaos and control.
Yeah.
If you get the information videos and have something written up and get it to me, we'll create a page and put it up.
Okay. Because it's
just get it to me. You've got to get the videos and write a couple paragraphs to the page, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, it's all about control, chaos, fear. You know, it's about the election ultimately. It's about getting rid of Trump because Trump is coming out after them. But look, a lot of this stuff, I really do believe the arrests are going to start this month. I mean, the way things are going.
They already started,
Trump.
John.
Yeah.
They already arrested Ghislaine Maxwell, whatever her name is. They're,
right, but I'm talking about the big people, you know.
She has the goods on all the big people.
I don't know if you listened to tonight's X-22 yet.
No, I didn't.
On the second one, the political one, the geopolitical one that he did, he talked about that. It turns out that she's been captured about a year ago. And she's been at least 6 months, maybe as long as a year. So let's say 6 months.
Yeah, she's been singing.
And she's not only been singing, she's been wearing a wire. She's been working for the feds at a deal. Okay, for the last 6 months and maybe longer. They got everything being recorded when she was, well, now that she's been actually arrested, and again, they made a deal with her on this. But, you know, they were recording her phone calls and everything going on. They had all these pedophiles calling up, finding out what they know. Did they get rid of my video? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, you're okay, blah, 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 blah. They got all this stuff on phone calls going to this woman the past 6 months. So that's why they're all going underground. You know, you got Tom Hanks. You know, there are a lot of names in there. I'm really surprised. But, you know, it's sad that all these people are so corrupt and demoralized.
This is why everybody's upset with Barr and Trump. When is he going to do the arrest? Well, you know, what's he dragging his feet? Look, he can't arrest Hillary and Obama and then expect to put them through the courts with all these Obama holdovers in there. What they've been doing is cleaning up. They just got rid of the Southern District Prosecutor that was holding so much stuff back just this month. They got him out of there.
Like Hugh says, you can't tell the people. You got to let the people see for themselves. You got to show it to
look,
them.
They have to try her in that Southern District. She owns them. This whole pedophilia thing, that's about being owned. They don't let you in there unless they got the goods on you. And that's why these judges are making bad decisions, because God forbid they should make the wrong decision, they'll release the information on him. They'll ruin him. He'll go to jail for his pedophilia or whatever it is that they got him doing. So that's what's wrong
with
this country.
That's what this is all about. Look, I want to tell you, we're going to see a whole new world by when we come to next year. I mean, things are going to change dramatically.
You're going to have a dramatic
how we perceive things, you know. I don't know if anybody saw the question where his son was doing a little bit of an interview, and he talked about, aliens and UFOs and things like that, what's going on out there with, what's the name of that place, out west, where all the
Area 51,
that's it.
Right.
Okay, so he was, his son asked him one of that question, and he kind of laughed a little bit, and he says, well, there's some amazing things going on out there, but I'm not ready to talk about it yet. And that's how he answered that. So. But it's funny. Look, technology is way beyond what we know and understand. They've been holding back. And Trump's about ready to, I think it'll probably happen next year, he's about ready to open that floodgates of technology that's just going to blow our minds. You know, cures of diseases and stuff we've had for a long time. This cure for this particular virus, I heard, may be the cure for any kind of a flu or anything. People who have taken this particular,
Chloroquine or something like that.
Yeah, chloroquine.
Yeah.
And whatever else they add to it. It turns out that the studies have showed that people who get this particular virus early and they take this early on, it disappears in a day. In days, it's gone. People who are on ventilators, if they're given to within 4 to 6 hours, they're off the ventilators, and it is literally a cure. And it may be a cure for all of these different viruses. And remember, they wanted to have this all the time because that's been their plan. They've been trying the swine flu, and this flu, and that flu. I mean, they've been doing this for quite a few years now, trying to get some emergency up on that. Go ahead.
Rod. For even at its worst, this virus is 97% survivable. It's no worse. I mean, as long as you don't have underlying conditions, people have gotten it and they have antibodies in their system, and they only got maybe hardly any symptoms at all. It depends on where your immune system is.
The news has done a really good job with their fake news, scaring people,
telling people.
Especially, you know, what causes heart problems and this, that, and the other. So anybody with a heart problem right away, they're not taking it, okay? But the truth of the matter is that with all the studies that they've been doing as far as working with this right now, and people have been taking it, they haven't had one problem with anyone with a heart, causing a heart problem.
They've been using this medicine for 80 years or 100 years. It's quinine. They use it for malaria. And they mix it with zinc, and they use a Z-Pak for secondary infections, and that's it. It's nothing new, and it hasn't killed all those people.
Malaria is a parasite, and the viruses, I guess, it's a bacteria parasite or some kind of a pathogen. In any event, all of them are pathogens. And so you would imagine if it's going to kill that pathogen, it's going to kill malaria. Hey, it's going to cure any of these problems.
Right, right.
I mean, just like MMS does the same thing. You know, but this sounds even better than MMS, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't know.
MMS doesn't work that quick.
You're right.
I guess it could. I know some of the stories he's told it could. All right, let's get back on track here. All right, thanks for the question. What was your name, Julie? I guess
Juliet.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, listen, Jan was trying to talk.
Just hit the mic for right now. Don't hit the next person. Let me get the mic. Hold on.
Yeah, you got it.
Jan?
Yeah.
You said you had a couple of questions. We'll deal with them quickly. I'll pass things over to Gerard. We'll see if Brent is here, and we'll move back into Q&A. But what do you got? How many?
They're short. I think I got three.
Okay.
Okay, the first one is the longest of the three. Starts out, they gave me 60 days to respond to the notice of assessment if I agree with them to pay the full amount of $1,106, including a $553 penalty and interest of $250.04. The total tax is $1,909.04. They requested to provide a copy of applicable federal returns from 2015. I may provide copies of previously federal returns and explain why I am not required to file returns in Kansas. I did not receive any 1099C from IRS. My questions are, should I write an affidavit of facts to respond? Second, do you have any thoughts on how I can explain why I am not required to file?
Well, we have a mountain of stuff, but again, to use them is going to open up a hornet's nest that you need to be able to deal with. And so that's the problem. It gets back to education. We have answers to these things. We could show you how to beat the IRS with their problems, how to shut them down. But again, you have to understand the game that they're playing. That's number one. The key thing here is this. You don't want to poke a stick into the hornet's nest. And when you go and you do an affidavit and you start to make an argument and tell them what the law is and all this stuff, you're only poking a stick into the hornet's nest. Turn it around on them and say, look, I want to pay any tax that I am liable for. I would write that, you know, and I do this in an affidavit form, but this is friendly to them. I want to pay any tax that I'm liable for, so please send me the proof of claim so that I can evaluate it and hopefully come to an agreement with you guys. Maybe I do owe you that kind of money. So please send me my proof of claim. They will never send a proof of claim. Okay, that's where your argument begins. And you always want to respond back to these people, not in a assaultive manner, not in a way that's telling them the law and they can't do this and they can't do that. I mean, that's sort of in your back pocket if you end up in court to deal with to some degree. But again, you have to know what court you're in, how to get out of that court, move yourself into a court of law, which can only shut them down. You know, you move to a court of law for cause, and it shuts down the Title 26 court. But again, all this stuff requires knowledge, how the system works, the games they play, the things they're going to say, and the positions they're going to take. But you can really frustrate them back by being very nice and tell them, hey, look, I don't know that I owe these taxes. If you say I do, give me your proof of claim. It's a literal paper. I think it's the Form 56 or the, what's the other one, 449? What is it? Form 56, and the other one is Fiduciary Authority, 4490 it is. So it's one of those two. If you put Form 56 into Google and 4490, Form 4490 into Google, you'll get two forms. One is Fiduciary Authority, and the other one is Proof of Claim. Both of them are affidavit forms that the IRS or any agency that is trying to collect monies off you, they have to fill that out and have it sworn to. It's an affidavit form in front of a notary, and then filed, and then served. They never do that because they can't. Who's going to sign an affidavit of lies and say it's truth? And they're not going to force the people working for them to do it because it's only going to lead back to the management of the IRS and so on. So all they do is they just ignore it. But when you have the knowledge of what the requirements are, you can do that. Now, if they've gotten into your bank account, for instance, this is one of the games they play, is they'll go into your bank account and they'll do that. They don't get fiduciary authority, which is what's required for them to get into your bank account. They have to get due process or fiduciary authority. Someone's got to give them that authority. I know I didn't give them authority to go into my bank account, but they do get it through acquiesce. And when you acquiesce, they'll send you a paper telling you, you owe us this, we're going to owe us money or whatever the case may be, and we're contacting your bank, and you have 7 days. The bank has to wait 7 days before it answers the IRS request of information on your account. And if in those 7 days you don't object to it, and I would do it by affidavit and certified mail and all that stuff, if you don't object within those 7 days, then their statutes, which they wrote, and of course benefits them, which again is a pile of junk anyway, but in their system, they think it has power, and it does have power as long as people believe it has power. So then the banks then will open the doors to the IRS to see all the information in your account. And these nasty, evil SOBs, We'll see what you put into that account over the course of the whole year. And if you've put $50,000 in there, or you put $20,000 in there, or you put $300,000 in there, whatever number of money, the amount of money that has gone to that account over the course of the year, they'll say, that's the tax you owe. And then they will go forward with the notice of lien, which is another game. There is no notice of lien. A notice of lien is a notice of lien, but in order to get a notice of lien, it means that a lien has been filed in the federal court with fiduciary authority and a proof of claim in the federal court district. And then at that point, that's when they can take that and call that a notice of lien, give it to the county for a sheriff collection. Now, all of that is done, and people have no clue about it, so they don't question it. But those who know and challenge them on it and say, hey, you know, where is the paperwork here in the county? I don't see no lien in the county. That's another crime, by the way. They say they are lying, saying there's a notice of lien in order to get a collection in the county. So again, it gets back to knowledge on knowing how the system works, the requirements that they need to fulfill that they don't. I haven't met a lawyer yet that knows this. This is so, I just happened to fall upon it, to be honest with you, a few years back. I mean, it was just accidental, really. I even used it, didn't even realize how powerful it was when I first used it. And so that's fighting those people is tough. They're not going to be around next year. If you're really frightened, I hate to tell you to go pay the money, but maybe that's it. You make the argument. If you make an argument with them, again, debating, looking for the proof of claim, it'll probably take you into next year and it'll be all gone anyway, so I don't know. But dealing with the IRS is dangerous, though. Next question, Jim. And by the way, we are going to write a paper on that on the IRS. I'm not sure what we've done. I go back and see what we've done. I think we did something on this, but I think we'll do joinders on the IRS cases. But go ahead.
Okay. If we should be contacted by a contact tracer, what should we tell them? Because what they are doing is unlawful.
Contacted by a what?
A contact tracer. You know, these people are tracking down everybody who's had contact with a person who's had COVID.
Well, look at, you know, if you know your sheriff and he's a constitutional guy, at least halfway, you can go talk with him and get his protection. If you've got a sheriff that's as dumb as a box of rocks, you got a problem. You know, this COVID stuff is scary with some of these governors and mayors and different people are doing. I don't know what exactly they're doing. I do understand, you know, the disease control thing, and that's what they're using. Here's a story, just a short little story. I have a friend who went down to Florida, and before he went to Florida, he got the test to make sure that he carried that test with him. And he gets into Florida, and before he even gets to the hotel room, okay, he gets stopped by the cops and questioned, because he's from New York. And even though he had that paper, they said, you're quarantined for 14 days. So they followed him to his hotel room that he had, okay? He went into the hotel room. They said, you stay there for 14 days. You're going down to Florida for business or pleasure. You're going to stay in the hotel room for 14 days, you know? But that's the kind of game they play. I don't know whether they checked on him, but he did leave the hotel room back and forth. You know, I guess, you know, you can't monitor all that.
I got news for you. If you leave New York and come back in, you're quarantined for 14 days right now, according to Cuomo.
Really?
That's right. So,
if I go to Pennsylvania to visit my family for a weekend, I come back, I'm quarantined?
Yep. If they find out about it. And you know what they did on your phone that they didn't tell you is they got this COVID tracker on here. Now, they claim that it doesn't work until you activate it, but I anything the government tells me like that, that's bull. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They put it on all our phones. They download it. It's on there.
If I have to travel, I'll shut my phone off, leave it home, and get a throwaway phone.
Oh, that's right. Or put it in a Mylar bag. you know, and it does do no good to shut it off and then turn it on when you get down there, because they're going to know. They're going to know your phone's working in another state, right. You know, and they probably got software that tells them that. So, and the underlying thing behind this whole contact tracing is because Bill Gates and Fauci and all of them have worked out a deal. You know, this is their eugenics time. They want to reduce the population and do their eugenics, and they're going to do it through a vaccine that has a chip in it. The guy just invented this new needle that sticks a chip in, and this new vaccine that they're coming up with that's not even been really tested as far as what it's going to do. But we already know that one of the first things it does is it makes everybody sterile, because he's already tried this in Africa. He's decimated Africa with his vaccine, Bill Gates. But the whole deal is they're going to, when they vaccinate you, they have a tracking chip in there, and it's going to tell them where you are. This new vaccine is what they, it's called RNA. Like, you heard of DNA? Well, RNA is a different type of, you know, like DNA, or I forget what it is, a recombination nucleus acid or some crap. But the reason they want that is because they're going to be able to program and update that vaccine wirelessly. And that vaccine will change your DNA permanently. And they'll have control over your body. And when they want to, they're going to use 5G technology as one of the ways they'll do it, microwave technology. It's in their papers. It says.
Well, let us hope that Trump's got a good enough control and understands this problem and makes sure it doesn't happen. Vaccines really are horrible anyway. There's no need for vaccines.
It's a nightmare situation. And, I mean, if they come out with a vaccine, I would go to my death before I took it. I would go to war. I would take my guns out.
Unfortunately, a lot of people will believe it and get it, and that's the problem. Okay, let's see. Do we have any other questions, John? Is that it?
Yes, there's one more. It says, I noticed David Zublik's link was missing under the Q page and wanted to know if he was still a creditable source.
Yeah, I don't believe so. At first I thought that he might have been something he did correlate with a lot of other people. He's always been extreme, but we know that a lot of these things that he talks about is true. But a lot of stuff he said, it just never happened. Nothing anywhere is near anything he's saying. He talks as if he has inside information, and nothing comes to pass. That's why I removed him. We don't want to. It just is incredible.
And he spends the whole half of the
trying to sell you
his garbage, his papers that's going to tell you everything on this one and that one. He's ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, that's why we pulled him off. I'm sure a lot of the stories he tells, there's a lot of the things going on similar to that, and a lot of it is true. You know, I mean, we hear the stories about what took place down in New York, and not just through him, through other sources, where, you know, even the cops threw up and cried and couldn't bear watching some of the things they saw in some of these videos. What was that guy's name? He had some wiener or something. He was a congressman. He's in jail now. I don't know if he's out yet, but he's in jail. But on his laptop, they had a lot of incriminating stuff.
Anthony Weiner. Yeah. But, you know, the cops that watched that video, there was like 10 of them. 8 of them are dead. So,
No kidding.
So they don't want that stuff out with a vengeance, believe me. And
The FBI's got it. Trump's
that's what
got
you're
going
to see this summer. You're going to see all that stuff come out. They're panicking.
Some of it is too hardcore to show. And even blocking, it's just too disgusting. It's unbearable. People don't, you know, I watch the movies sometimes and you see this blood. I just don't understand why they do all this. I mean, years ago, they never had to go through the blood and guts and gore. But now, you know, like the Alfred Hitchcock movies, you never saw the knife hitting the person. This, you got the slashes, the blood splatting. I mean, you're watching a human being destroyed. And even though it's a video or a movie, it's destructive. It's destructive to the soul. It's destructive to our morals. But anyway, some of the things they say is so horrific that they can't show it to everybody.
And they claim it's Hillary Clinton and Uma Abedin on the film, so they let that sink in.
Right. Okay, if that's the last question.
Yes, John, that's all I've got for tonight.
Are there any, there's no announcements, are there?
Just the one that we had about trying to get people to take our inputs from the Facebook page and post it on their Facebooks and disseminate it everywhere they can. That was the only one.
Okay, look, we need help. We need more help. We need as many people as possible to volunteer some time to work with us in National Liberty Alliance. We have a lot of positions open, leadership positions, or just positions where people maybe make some phone calls for a couple hours or an hour here or an hour there throughout the week. We need people who can do PowerPoint videos. They'd be very creative with different things. We need people who can investigate things and different skills. People with skills and people without skills, because there's lots of things we're doing and we just need help. So anybody who is willing to volunteer some of their time to assist us, and definitely you should be volunteering your time, everyone, even people working, you know, volunteering their time on a national level, they need to be active in their own counties, participating and getting things going. Anybody who wants to connect, if you want to connect with one of your some people in your county or your state, I did hear, I think Francine said that there is a page. Is there a page with numbers on it? Do we know where that's at? The end of the directory or something? District leaders, let me see. I don't know if this page is being able to be seen by anyone. And we've got the 10 districts broken up. Okay. All right. I'm not sure exactly what's going on here. Francine, can you tell us, is this page real or is this?
Yes. Below the, keep scrolling down below the district map. Stop right there. That is a list of the district leaders, their first name, the state that they're responsible for, and their telephone number. And now if you scroll down a little bit further, keep going. Okay, stop right there. Now that's where the state coordinators will begin. And if we do not have a state coordinator, then you're going to have the district leader's name and phone number there listed there as well.
Okay, so all of these phone numbers are phone numbers that will be answered.
Well, if they aren't available, they'll get voicemail. But yes, those
No one should expect that someone's there 24/7.
Right.
And definitely don't expect that they're going to respond the same day. Even it could be 24 hours, and in some it could be even 2 days. And I'm sure they'll say on the machine or something, you know, we'll get back to you in the next 48 hours or something, because they're volunteers, and some people can volunteer more time than others, but they're volunteers, and we need more volunteers. Help.
Right. All of these fellows listed all work for a living, so it'll be at least 24 hours, maybe a couple of days, like you said. But yes, all of those names and all those numbers are good.
Okay, all right, so there you go. These are the people you contact in your state in order to get some assistance to help connect you with other people that are active and help you organize and work to get things going. So that's there. So that is under the directory. You come down and click on district leaders, and that's it right there. Okay? And read about it, leaders wanted. Is this plan we have up here valid, or does this have to be updated, or what?
I believe it has a paragraph that needs to be corrected under the district leader or the state leader. I haven't talked to Terry about it yet, but other than that, it's 98% correct.
Okay. Well, if there's any changes to be made here, you can let me know, and I'll go up and make the changes. Just let me know. Or who's doing this? Carl put it together?
Carl and Terry, I believe, worked on that.
Right. Okay. So if Carl's busy and you need me, you know, let me know, and I'll do what I got to do on that page. So. Okay, so there you go. Anybody that wants to make a connection with people, get involved, look at. We need to save this nation. Only the people can do that. People got to step up and do it. We got to get the knowledge, and then we got to get up there and do things. So let's take it back. Okay, I guess that's it. Is Brent here? Anybody see Brent tonight?
Yes, I'm here.
He's here? Okay. All right, I'm going to move controls over to you, Gerard. And I don't know when Brent is done. I guess click on the next or the phone next to the next person, and you got it from there. All right, Gerard?
Yep.
Okay. All right, Brent Winters, the author and of The Excellence of the Common Law and some other books. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic. And by the way, feel free. You're coming in as an administrator right now here, right?
I'm not sure how I'm in.
Did someone unmute you, or did you come in?
Yeah, somebody unmuted me. That's right.
Because
yeah.
You should be able to sign in as a host.
Yes, I could. I can. I don't want to belabor people's time here, but I'll talk with you about how that can happen and what happened to my hookup later. But I appreciate it.
Yeah, this way, you know, because you can type in whenever you want to comment on anything you're saying.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. You got the mic?
Thank you. Well, this is from a friend. I only know what I read on the internet. And this is from a gal by the name of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I believe this gal claimed to be a member of Congress. She said in her post on the public media, "It is vital that governors maintain restrictions on businesses until after the November elections, because economic recovery will help Trump be reelected. A few business closures or job losses is a small price to pay to be free from his presidency." Now, it could be that if he thinks he's threatened, this is Brent's take on the situation. If DJ thinks that what they're doing to him or doing to the nation threatens his election in November, there's no telling what he'll do, but he'll strike them hard, I think. That's politics. If you're going to get in the kitchen, you got to deal with the heat, and if you don't want to deal with the heat, said Harry Truman, get out of the kitchen. That was in a day when he lived in a place where the kitchen was attached to the back of the house, and it was attached by a porch so that the heat from the summer kitchen wouldn't get in the house. And it'd get pretty hot in the summer kitchen, be 100 degrees, 100% humidity, and you're baking bread and got the stove fired up till the pipe's about red hot. So that's what he meant by that. And if you enter the ring of politics, you're in an area where there are no rules in this sense. Whatever the other fella or anybody can get away with, that's what they'll do, law or no law. And more. You remember Charlton Heston, Ben Hur, and he was contemplating entering the chariot race with a four-horse team. But he needed a four-horse team that could beat the other teams. He found this old Arab who had trained four horses. And this old Arab said, "Remember, in the arena, there is no law." Well, that's the way it is in politics. It's in the arena, and there is no law. Oh, they make a show of it as though there are rules and honor and dignity. In politics, there is no honor and dignity. There's only viciousness. And how vicious can you get? These folk, if what this text says of this supposed congresswoman, if what it says is true, if that's really what they're thinking, and I'm persuaded it is, I mean them, the left-wing wackos, then there's no limit to what they'll do. They've killed people a lot already. Face masks do reduce the oxygen level in your blood. There's no question about that. The time has come, and it's long past due, that everybody, I mean everybody, just told them where they could get off. Just have a seat over there in that hand basket, and let's forget it. No more closing down businesses. We had this school teacher tell us a while ago what they were doing to school teachers. Well, in those situations, of course, the school teacher's saying, but I don't want to lose my job. You got to be a team player. You got to go along with all the stupidity. Well, I dare say that the school teachers have been going along with stupidity for the last 40 years. I've talked to a lot of them. I know they have. But the question comes, where do you draw the line? Now they're telling school teachers they got to wear a face mask while they're trying to instruct students. While they're trying to instruct students orally. And students can't raise their hand and say, teacher, I got to go to the little boy's room, or there's going to be an accident, and you can't understand what they're saying, and on the madness goes. No, you just say no. That's what you say. I'm not playing anymore. I'm not a part of yours. I'm not that stupid. You can be that stupid if you want to. I'm not going to. It's just downright stupid. Well, some people could lose their jobs. Of course, I think if you said to them something like this, I carry this card, I forget who gave it to me. This card says this, it's just laminated, big enough to put in your pocket, says, according to the Americans with Disabilities Act, I am exempt from all regulations, both public and private, mandating face mask usage. Wearing a face mask poses a health risk to me. Under the ADA and HIPAA, I am not required to disclose my medical conditions to anyone. You don't even have to say, it impedes my breathing. If you don't want to, just for medical reasons, I'm not wearing a mask. And if you make me do it, here's what could happen. There's a hotline information, 1-800-514-0301, to the Department of the Justice Department of the United States. That's 800-514-0301. I haven't tried the number. I assume it's a good one. I don't know. Organizations and businesses can be fined up to $75,000 for the first ADA violation and $150,000 for any subsequent violation. Who do these people think they are? You walk into the UPS store and some twerp comes out and tells you, you got to put on a mask. I'd say, well, you want to mail my box or not? You got to put on a mask first. Well, maybe you ought to call the sheriff. How's that? Why don't we start with that? No, I'm calling the police, or I'm calling the sheriff. You call the police, I'll call the sheriff. You're calling the feds, I'll call the sheriff. I'm calling the sheriff. Well, these are just ideas, and I'm not telling anybody what to do because every situation is different, and you must make a decision on your own. I've made a decision on my own what I'm going to do given any particular situation, but I am determined. I have taken an oath. No, I've taken seven oaths. Seven. It only takes one. I've taken seven. Very dangerous. Seven oaths to do what? To support and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies, foreign and domestic. You go along with this stupidity, I'll say this much, you go along with it, you're not supporting and defending the Constitution. You say, well, I didn't take an oath. Well, that doesn't make any difference whether you took an oath or not. An oath doesn't give me any new duty. An oath doesn't give the president any good new duty. It doesn't give the congressman any new duty. It doesn't give the seaman douche or the private or the general or the lieutenant any new duty. Or the county prosecutor when he takes the oath of the governor. No, it just strengthens an oath they already had as Americans to support and defend the Constitution. You're born in this land. You live on this land. I talked to a Canadian not long ago. I couldn't really argue. I've always thought that dual citizenship was a bad deal. It wasn't right. It isn't right. How can you be loyal to two countries at the same time? That's called divided loyalty. Divided loyalty is no loyalty. Tell that to Senator Ted Cruz. He's a citizen of Canada. He wanted to run for president. Have we lost our blasted minds? Barack Obama, Jindal, all of them, not natural born citizens. But back to my point before I get too far afield on my frolic. In this situation, we have a duty if we're living on this land. This Canadian said, I'm a dual citizen. I said, well, and this person living in the United States, he said, how do you handle that? Well, I'm living here now. I'm living down here on this land, down here in the States now. I'm loyal to the states now. Why? Well, because that's where I live. Well, that was a pretty good answer. But I know this, you're living on this land. If you're on this call, you're living on this land. You've received the benefits of this land. You've received the benefits of all the things we have here. Then you have a duty, not to your neighbor so much, not first and foremost, but your, or the government. Your duty is to the law of the land. The law of the land, because if you're loyal to the law of the land, you're loyal to the land. Well, what is the law of the land? Well, we've got a document called the Constitution that says in there, Article 6, that this is the supreme way we do things. That's what law of the land means. It means the way we do things, due process. Well, I used to say, I said to a dog catcher one time, I was in the house working, I saw some portly woman outside with a uniform on. She banged on my window. It was on a front porch window. I thought, what in the dickens is this? I came around the back door, the side window toward the back door, and I opened the window. And I said, what's cooking, sis? She said, these your dogs? I said, no, those aren't my dogs. She said, well, they belong here, don't they? I said, yeah, put them over the fence. Well, yeah, they were a couple of pups. And started in on me. Had a fellow with her that was some kind of a neophyte. He was supposed to learn the trade of how to abuse people, I suppose, like bureaucrats do. I wasn't at my house. I was at my son's house. And said, are these your dogs? I said, no, those aren't my dogs. I'm just visiting. Well, you know these people. I said, well, yeah, I know them. I know a lot of people. And it just got worse from there. She was showing off to this new employee. And I don't know why I said it. I didn't intend to say it. She said, well, we're going to do this, this, and this. Are those your cats over there? Do they have collars, et cetera? And it just popped out before I had time to figure out what I was saying. I said, well, that's not for you to answer, and that's not for me to answer. That's for a federal judge to answer. A federal judge. And maybe you'd like to tell a federal judge about it. Well, I didn't realize it would have such an effect. All of a sudden, I would have thought she'd have been my friend the way she was acting toward me. You know, these people that snips, I call some of them snips, just telling you off when you're going, trying to give people your business and they're telling you off. Just don't get worried. If you want to walk out, walk out. Don't do business with them. That'd be a good start. And don't ever do business with them again. UPS is doing that. They're telling people you got to have a mask. They're sending their little snips out to tell you. There's no law that I can't go into a public place, a public carrier that opens to the public, and they've got their doors open. There's no law that says I got to wear a mask in any of these stores. It's pure intimidation. Governors don't have the authority under our law in any state, as far as I know, to decree what we must do. But they've got people believing it for some strange reason. And to go along with that kind of lawlessness, people say, oh, what does it hurt? What do you mean, what does it hurt? What does it hurt? It's a matter of principle. It's not a matter of money, even. It's not a small thing if somebody can tell you to put a diaper on your face. It's against my religion. Well, what religion is that? Christianity. Well, how's that against your religion to wear a mask? Well, the Bible says that God breathed into the nostrils of my grandpa the breath of life, the nephesh, and he became a living soul, and I'm not going to impede that. I am not going to impede that by putting a mask on my face. Now, Gerard did an excellent job of breaking it down as to how unhealthy that is, and I'd heard that here and there and from other places, but he put it all together. It's fact. And if we're stupid enough, S-T-O-O-P-I-D, to go along with this, and to deprive ourselves of the very breath of life, what will they do next? All they want to do, they don't know what they're doing. They are really stupid. And I use that term in its technical sense, stupid. That means thick and slow. They're thick and slow. They're vicious and they're hardened. Don't have anything to do with them. They're envious. What does the Bible say about envy? It says this. Who can stand before envy? It's a rhetorical question. nobody. Once you, that's why they killed Jesus Christ. It says why they did it. They knew who he was. They did it out of envy. They couldn't stand it anymore. Envy leads to murder. You let it go. You get away from people like that. They're nuttier than fruitcakes. They're unpredictable. They're dangerous. But you don't let them invade your life. As the Bible says, you don't attack. You just stand your ground. No, stand fast. Stand steady, steady, fast. That means fast means that means fixed. Fixed is an old word. I didn't mean quick. I didn't mean that. I mean you stand fixed on your ground. It's your house. It's your body. Good gravy. It's your body. And they're going to tell you you got to cover your mouth and your nose. You say, well, Brent, you're not talking like a lawyer. You're not being very sophisticated about this. Life is down to the ground. You talk about statutes and commandments and court cases from now to the cows come home. Doesn't change the fact that you've got a right to breathe. Get that mask off your face and grow up. And putting a mask on your face to keep out a virus is like building a chain link fence to keep mosquitoes out of your yard. It is just downright dumb. Well, before I get too worked up, let me go to something maybe, well, let me just read this. He who would win his cause with power must frame points of support and look with steady aim. Attack their weak points. Defend your strong with heart. Strike but few blows, but strike them to the heart. All scattered fires, but end in smoke and noise. The scorn of men, the idle play of boys, keep them this first great precept ever near. Short be your speech, your matter strong and clear. Earnest your manner, warm and rich your style. Severe in taste, yet full of grace the while. Well, I didn't write that. Justice Joseph Story of the U.S. Supreme Court wrote that. Well, what he's saying there is few blows for truth need be struck, but the few blows delivered need to drive to the heart of the matter. In this world, the enemies of freedom lurk. I'm reading from the Constitution and Declaration of 76, a common lawyer comments clause by clause. This is the final few paragraphs. A common lawyer comments, yours truly, a common lawyer comments. Well, the enemies lurk. The wise will keep his guard up all around, but his lightning strike at the decisive moment need never guard its flanks. Though truth must always appear a strong, steady flame, it nevertheless, at the open instant, leap forth, quick and powerful, piercing deep to the marrow, even overturning thoughts and intentions. Count on it. The power of truth can turn the individual heart and mind to follow it. In fact, history is clear. Truth delights in doing so. The United States became its own country to keep its Constitution. That's why we did it, to keep our Constitution. You say, wait, Brent, wait. 1776, we didn't have a Constitution. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, we did. At that time, our Constitution was the unwritten tradition of the common law and government protecting one's rights to govern oneself. But King George ignored that common law, conspired with his cronies. The Declaration of 76 says he combined with others to dominate the colonists using the law of the city's admiralty tribunals. The Declaration of 76 calls that a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution. A jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution. Well, the Constitution wasn't written yet, was it? In 1776. Wouldn't be written for another 11 years. But there it is. That's our Constitution. And backed those cronies, those parliamentary cronies' unconstitutional legislation, given his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. Unlike the common law tradition, the law of the city spawns undoable piles of imperial legislation by decree, expanding state power, shrinking freedom. That's what's happening to us as I speak. The governors of states are usurping the power of dictators. No, I don't mean a little bit. No, I don't mean maybe. No, that's exactly what they're doing. With a high hand before God and everybody, as we say. And we go along with that? America, I'm dumbfounded. See, Brent, have you wore a mask? No, I haven't wore a diaper on the face yet. I don't intend to. I am just a mere mortal. I don't want to say I'll never do it, but I certainly hope I never do it, unless they knock me in the head and make me crazy or something. Of course, I can see the whole country is smitten with madness, in mass. Did you ever wonder when Jesus Christ said that the road to hell, the way to hell is wide, and many there be that go thereat, to hell. But the way to life is narrow, and few there be that find it. You're looking at it. You're watching goofy Pied Pipers, dinky little governors that don't have a clue what they're doing. Overloaded, overblown with their own self-importance, telling people to put diapers on their faces, and they're just following along. You know, there was a time in Europe when there were so many street urchins and orphans in the villages of France that the Jewish slave traders from the Roman Empire, or what was the Roman Empire, came into France and with pipers. Yeah, Pied Pipers, that means just footmen, just walking along, playing their little flutes. And it got to be the rage among the children to follow them, and they led them to a specific town in France, which was the center to assemble children as slaves for slave trade. And there the Jewish slave traders from the Roman Empire compiled them, moved them down to the coast of the Mediterranean, these European children from the Germanic states in France, and shipped them at great profit as slaves to be used for things that children ought not to be used for, to the Arab nations and the Islamic nations on the north of Africa. You say, how could that be? Well, people are just that stupid. Parents just let their children run free like that, and they stole them all. They had it down to science. Well, that's what's happening here. You're watching parents, grandparents, people are old enough to know better, doing all this, wearing these masks, getting mad, making fun of people that won't, calling them unpatriotic. And you wonder how it is that the useful, well, I call him Old Scratch, how he could lead so many people to hell. It's not going to be hard at all. He's doing it all day, every day, and we're watching the outworking of it in a, well, I'm hoping that some people will look at that and say, well, I see how this works out, what Jesus Christ said about wide is the way to destruction. People are dupable real easy, and they will go with the crowd. Well, one more paragraph and I'll quit. As the columnist, duty also calls you to keep your constitution by foiling those trying to displace it with acts, I'm quoting the Declaration of 76, acts of pretended legislation, such as bureaucratic decrees. The enemy's weak point is his dull scorn for the common law principles our Declaration reveals and our Constitution arrays. Your strong point, I'm talking to you, your strong point is your sharpened esteem for those keen-edged principles, sure of their power. And wielding these, you will strike to the enemy's heart, his contemptuous, this is his heart, his contemptuous raging against the majesty of true law. At the heart of your calling is your leadership, the power to follow truth, to do right, even when the will of all others fails. That's what you're watching now. The will of all others has failed. They have substituted the will. They've been bamboozled. They substituted the will of these goofy governors for their own. In fact, the true leader is foremost a follower of truth. We'll repeat that one. A true leader is foremost a follower of truth. Further, he need never seek followers of himself, but seek above all else to follow the truth. Neither does true leadership seek argument or battle. To be sure, as the leader follows hard after the truth, both argument and battle will find him soon enough. You don't have to look for it. Avoid it as much as you can. It'll follow you. If you're a leader following the truth, what happens will be what you'll have to deal with, and you'll enjoy it. But remember, your focus is to follow the truth, not to argue and fight. If you have to kick a dog in the teeth once in a while as you walk along, well, you got to kick a dog in the teeth. You know, the Arabs have a saying. It's ancient. They still say it. They tell me they still say it. It goes like this. The caravan walks and the dogs bark. The caravan walks and the dogs bark. But the camels apparently aren't bothered by the dogs. By following truth through hardship, often being despised, conviction deepens, fetching up more courage, which is, above all, a stout and steady heart. The grit to never quit, to go ahead while others lag, that's the chief feature of leadership. Conviction arises from understanding deep within, welling up from the indwelling spirit. Such a person, says Robert Jackson, does not know his own power, unaware of it himself, but he nevertheless draws awareness, arousing in others faith against fear and daring against deception. In sum, true leadership follows truth by thinking God's thoughts after him, fostering a contagion of cool heads and stout hearts, which is courage. Well, I want to quit there and say that what Jackson says here is such a powerful statement. He says that leadership doesn't know its own power. A leader is one who follows truth. A leader is one who follows truth. And most leaders don't know their own power. Moses went up on the mountain. He was face to face with Yahuwah, from God himself, the lawgiver, Jesus Christ, pre-incarnate. And when he came back down off the mountain, the Bible says that his face shone like the sun. And the people saw him and they could not look upon him. But then there's this little phrase. It just kind of stuck in at the end of the sentence in the Word of God in the Bible. And it says, but Moses in the Old English, but it says, Moses wist not that the skin of his face shone. Wist. That means that's an Old English word. It means he didn't know. His face was so bright that people couldn't stand to look at him, and he was saying, what? What's going on? He didn't even know. The skin of his face shone. He did not know. But why did it shine? Because he had been in the presence of his Maker. Didn't say he saw his Maker. No man can look upon God and live, says the Bible. But he was in his presence. And he didn't even know it. Like the leader doesn't know his power. Well, may God bless you all to pieces. And may he bless our country, America, beyond our wildest imaginations, as he has already done. Back to you, Gerard, or John. As they find
it. Okay, thank you, Brett.
Okay, Gerard, thank you.
Very good. Amen to that, too. Okay, we have some people in the queue. Let's see if we can move through that in short fashion here. Let's see, we got Christina from L.A. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm the one who asked about the contact tracing. And so I heard John mention about the sheriff's protection, and I need to get in touch with the sheriff to see what he even believes or whatever. But I was thinking, and I don't know if this is a good idea, most people who signed up for the 6666, to me, I don't know, they're crazy for even signing up for that. But I was thinking that I don't know how they would approach people as far as, like, do they do it through calls or come to your door? I hear, you know, they do both now. I live in a blue state, so our governor already hired all the people and trained them. So I was thinking, would it be a good idea to let them know, because they probably don't know that they're violating people's rights by doing that, and that they can be held personally liable. It might even stop them in their tracks from going forward. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm sure that there's a lot of information out there, like you said, that you can give them. They are obviously ignorant to the law, to the real law. You know, they're running around pressing statutes. What they don't understand is that, you know, there's a consequence to that. And listen, just because they're following orders, that was the cry of the lower men in the Nuremberg trials that said, well, we were just following orders. And guess what? They ended up on the end of a rope, too. And so they don't think about that. But if you bring it to their attention and say, look, if I got to go to court with this, believe me, you're coming, you're getting called in, too, along with everybody else. You know, because anybody that, from the guy who makes the edict to the ones that enforce the edict, is responsible under the law, you know? And there's lots of law out there, too, that you can rest in, you know? They even have things on the books right now. They're so ignorant. I can't believe that they just go ahead and do stuff. They've already said that they cannot refuse you service based on just the fact of you not wearing a mask at all, and they call it civil rights, but it's actually unalienable rights that come from God. But you know, they got to call them civil rights. But even the liberal commie people believe that under civil rights that's discrimination. And I went into McDonald's without a mask because I decided one day, I said, I'm not going to even pretend anymore. Because if you put that dang thing around your neck, and even if you pull it down around your throat and you don't pull it up, nobody will say anything. Because that mask basically says, I am a compliant. I will comply. Even if you're wearing it wrong, you're still complying by putting it around your neck. And that's the biggest reason they have that edict, because they can tell from a distance who's going to follow orders and who's not. And that's why they need it. And I told the girl, she says, you got to get out of here. I said, look, I was going to go through the drive-thru, but before I do, because they had a big line of cars, I wanted to know if they were serving the breakfast all day, because that's what I like. And she's like, you can't be in here without a mask. And I said, I have a health condition that precludes me from wearing it. It doesn't matter. You can't. I said, what do you mean it doesn't matter? We have a sign on the door. I said, big deal. I said, you know, back at the turn of the century, they had signs on the door that said no blacks allowed. And that's a civil rights lawsuit, as is this. Well, I don't know, we got a sign that I'm just following orders. I said, that's what they did in Nuremberg, and those guys that said that hung. I made her very upset, you know. And then I said, all you got to do is answer my question. And I was 20 feet away from this woman, you know. And she goes, no, we're on a shortened menu. And I said, oh, so the COVID knows what I'm eating, and that shortened menu is going to keep me from getting the flu. I said, this is all stupidity, and you're all stupid by obeying this. And I'm not going to eat here anyway. I'm going to go across the street, you know. But they're ignorant. And I told her, I said, I'll be back, because I'm going to get your name, because obviously you're the manager. You're the little dictator that came up to tell me you're going to make me wear this mask, even though I have I'm claiming I have a condition that you can't ask me about. And you're telling me it doesn't matter, that you're going to discriminate against me, even if I have this condition. It's like saying you can't come in with a wheelchair. What would they do with that? So think about it. You're on solid ground, and it just takes you asserting yourself and making them realize how ridiculous they are. And I told her, I said, you're going to be in the lawsuit and you're going to be liable just like they are. I said, make no mistake about it. So, I mean, that was an empty threat because I didn't go back with a lawsuit, but she doesn't know that I won't, you know what I mean? So I, and like John says, and I think Brent alluded to in that, look, at everybody's waking up now. There is no second wave. It's all baloney. And so more and more people are not wearing masks. And so maybe it's a good thing. You know, as much as they're going to use it to see who's compliant, you know, the Patriots can use it to see who's a Patriot. Just refuse to wear it. And if you have
I don't wear the mask, but I was just asking about the contact tracing because I know that that's in operation here. If that would just be a good idea to let the person know that tries
absolutely.
To, I'm going to try to avoid being contacted, you know, the best I can. But if they, you know, some kind of way get in touch with me, because I'm not taking a test and I'm not going to let them talk to me or anything because, you know, I already know that. Against my rights. So,
they
have no business trying to control my behavior or anything. They have no, you know, authority over dictating my health, what I choose to do. I mean, and so I just was wondering if it was a good idea to stop it there instead of me having to do a sheriff thing. I mean, I'm going to go talk to the sheriff because I want to, you know, do more in this parish that I live in. But, you know,
I don't think they have any enforcement if you refuse to answer their questions. I don't think you have to let them in. And if they wanted to come in because they thought there was a problem, they have to get a warrant. They have to get the sheriff involved or some other law enforcement. They really need a warrant because it's against the Fourth Amendment, you know. And that goes with whether it's child services, you know, or anybody else like that. It's the same difference.
Yeah, I already know all that. Yeah.
Right, so they're the same people. They're the same actors, you know.
Yeah.
And I had a census worker come up here when Obama first got elected, even though it wasn't time for the census. He sent the census takers around with these little GPSs to get within 20 feet of the front door and drop a pin. And she came on my property, and I said, "What are you doing?" "Well, we're doing this for the census and." And I said, "You got no right to do that." I said, what does the federal government need to know where 20 feet from my front door is?" I said, "I don't even know two reasons for them to have a GPS reading on my front door." And I said, "One would be a military reason to drop a bomb down my chimney. And the second one would be to have foreign troops that can't read roadsides to come up and pick me up." And I said, "What you're doing is unconstitutional. It's against, you know, you're violating my inalienable rights." And I said, "You know, down south, they're hanging census takers in the trees and scrawling Fed in their chest." I said, "You know, I should really take that meter and throw it in a dish and break it and maybe beat you up and send you on your way." She got so upset she ran off my property. Now that, I said, if we were down south in Alabama, that's the way they're treating you guys. And I said, "You know what? You deserve it because I know you're only making whatever it is. You sold your soul for $10 an hour." And I got her so upset she left and didn't come back. But
yeah,
anyway, that's me. I'm sorry. I'm not telling you to do that because they'll probably say that you threatened them or whatever.
Yeah. No, I want to make them aware of what they're doing so that maybe they won't think what they're getting paid is even worth it, you know?
Right, and look, they can't come on your property without permission, and if you don't give them permission to be on your property, how are they going to question you? You know,
I mean, people come to the door, so. Yeah.
Well, you say you need to leave now because you're not welcome, so you're trespassing, so I don't want to see you closer than the curb. Mm-hmm. You know, you can leave now. I'm kicking you off. This is private property. It's my property.
Okay.
You know, and I would also put up no trespassing signs, you know what I mean, and put up some kind of a rope or gate that they have to breach, because that all makes a difference under law. You know, if you leave your front door in and somebody walks in, you can't get them for breaking and entering.
I live in a subdivision, so the one I live in, they, you know, you can't really put anything. So you can kind of come to my door.
Nah, I don't know. I think you could put a no trespassing sign on your front lawn.
Yeah, I could put a sign.
Yeah, no, you could. And you could even put a little plastic chain up that says, you know, no solicitation and no trespassing without, you know, no passing this without permission. Just look at your little subdivision. They have less rights than anybody does. They're the easiest ones to beat in court, all that subdivision garbage. You know, because it's all unconstitutional, every last bit of it. Yeah. So I would, you know, don't get too crazy, but you know what I mean. Assert yourself. They're not used to people. They're used to sheeple, basically.
Yeah.
And if you put up some resistance, you know, and if they're basically they're a public servant, and there's a public servant questionnaire that you could throw at them and say, hey, you have to answer this because there's a law out there that says that if they're working for the government, they got to tell you who they are and who they work for and all these questions. And you say, fill this out, you know, and get it back to me because I don't know who you are, or who you're working for, and I need to know who your bosses are and stuff, and I need to know where the lawsuit goes to. That's all. Yeah. All right.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Yeah, bye. Okay, we have Aslu from M.O. Where's M.O.? Montana or Missouri? M.O.
Yeah, it's a whole new world for him.
I can hear you. Somebody's talking.
Good evening. Gerard, I already sent in the question. I'm sorry. I thought I removed myself from the question.
Fine. That's fine. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now we have Anthony from West Virginia.
Hey, Gerard. How you doing?
Pretty good. Can't complain.
Can you hear me all right?
I certainly can.
Well, that's good. I talked to Randy last week. He gave me a call. He's the regional director for my state.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys want me to take on the leadership of West Virginia again, just go ahead and give me that permission. Somehow we got to communicate so I can have access. Like I used to have to the state list, you know.
Right.
Gerard.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I will have Randy contact Anthony.
He
called him the first time at my request, so I'll take care of that. Okay.
Okay. So
thank you for calling him, Anthony.
So you're in the queue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I've got to answer me this. I did some. I looked deep into that statement that there's a chip in the vaccine.
No, it's the not way in the vaccine. It's not in the vaccine.
The chip is on the package, and
right.
somehow they can link the package to you, but you're not walking around with the chip inside of you because of taking that vaccine. The way that it was told to me was it leads you to believe that you're going to have a chip inside of you, and that's
well,
that's
what they ultimately want, and they have
that's
a,
what they want.
They have a manufacturer that has come out with a new method of doing the vaccine and the chip all in one shot, and he's claiming that he can make that available quicker than they can make the bottles available. There now they got a shortage. They can't get these bottles out quick enough because, you know, they're going to want 300 million doses for America and 8 billion for the world. And so it's a problem. So what this manufacturer did, and he already has a contract through the government somehow, he's got this single dose thing, which is the needle and the chip all in one. So it's here. If they want to use it, it's here. Now, I don't know that we're going to get to that point because this thing is fizzling out faster than they wanted it to. People are fed up, so I'm hoping and praying that we don't get to that point. You know what I mean? But also, they've been gauging people's reactions, and they watch us on the social media, and that's why I hate Facebook, but you know what? I got time now, and I go on there, and I educate everybody, and I throw all my stuff out, and they used to out and out just delete it. Now they put this mask over it. Says that this is partially in a false information. It was checked by our fact checker. So I see a weakening in the social media. They're getting worried because they're not taking my stuff right out. Because I used to, when they took it right out, I said, You know, I don't know what community standard you're going by. It seems to me it's like Chinese communist standards as far as I can see. And by taking this stuff out, you're opening yourself for a federal lawsuit because you're doing damage to the people. This is valuable information, blah, blah, blah. And I would write it in time after time. And I don't know that that made any difference or not. Or maybe I'm just part of a wave that's been hitting them. But they seem to be worried about taking stuff out like they used to. So now they put this big thing over it, which is ridiculous because if you look into who their fact checkers are, it's run by George Soros and people like him.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's all these fascist Marxist people, and they have no qualifications, mm-hmm. whatever. And look, they're going to pay because I know that the justice system is going to come up against them. You know,
they did that same thing to my wife just last week. They did that to one of her posts. It was a pro-Trump post, of course.
Exactly.
So, anyway, how do you spell your name?
What, my first name?
Yeah, G-I-R-R-A-R-D.
No, it's G-E-R-A-R-D, actually.
Two R's?
G-E-R-A-R-D.
One R.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
well, do you want me to friend you on Facebook? I could do that.
You could do that. I'm there. You can. I'm out there so far. You know, I'm not hiding.
mm-hmm.
When you
what
get
do
to
I use for a last
point?
Name? I got Gerard Mulroy.
No. It's
Aprea. Butler.
Aprea. A-P-R-E-A.
A-P-R-E-A?
Correct.
A-P-R-E-A. My big fingers. Okay. Yep, yeah. There you are. I got A-P-R-E-S. A-P-R-E-A. Yep, there you are.
Yeah. That's my other long-lost cousin. No, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, you know Dan Scadam in Montana.
Yes, I do. Yeah. He's a good guy.
He's got a bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay, I sent you a friend request. Well, I'm going to see what I could do to get Montana, I used to live in Montana, to get West Virginia back on the books. We're going to see what we can do to get rolling. I hope I'll be able to get everything organized and
move ahead. It's a good time to be engaged because it's time. You know, things are going to start moving
right.
quickly. I really, really believe
I sense that.
Yep.
I sense that. This is what we've been waiting for.
Exactly. And just like the lemmings know when to run over the cliff, we've got to get ready.
You know, one thing I'd like to share with you that's come to me in my Bible readings, I read Proverbs by the day, you know, so today I read Proverbs 6, and the word mischievous came up today again. And back around, you know, I think it was Proverbs 3 or 4, the word mischievous just comes up. And these people, you know, mischief, it doesn't sound like a really harsh word when you say it, but God uses that word. That's very accusatory, that word. I mean, it goes deep. Evil people perform this mischief, and that's the kind of people we're dealing with. They're mischievous that want to control us from the cradle to the grave.
Mm-hmm. It's almost
so
like
anyway.
Black magic, yes. Okay.
Yeah, well, I'll tune in again next week and see if I have any questions by then, but it's nice talking to you. And
okay, thanks for stepping up. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Looking forward to it.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
God bless you. Bye. Okay, we got Jim from PA. You are on. Jim from PA. Going once. Are you there? Jim from PA.
I'm here.
Yes, go ahead.
Hey, sorry, I was muted. Okay, NLA has discussed the NLEGIS, the all cap scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've discarded it. It's not that critical right at this time. However, a substitute pastor told us, and I'm researching it right now, my King James Bible, that, so my question to NOA, is it an abomination for them to use all caps, if the King James Version uses all caps for God in the Bible.
I've never thought of that, and you know what? It wouldn't surprise me, because everything they do is an abomination in a certain sense, you know. And like I said, I don't use it because it's an abomination to me. I don't want to be associated with it, you know. I mean, and I'm certainly not God, and I'm not a corporation and that's number two. I'm not a corporation, and they do it with corporations. And so even if it is just part of the universal commercial code, you know, I just don't want to do it. And I don't want to give them credibility. Like John says, you know, a lot of times if you follow what they're doing, basically what you're doing is you're giving them credibility. You know, the other thing we do is we give them jurisdiction without even realizing it, you know, and a lot of times our silence is acquiescence, because we don't protest, and there's certain presumptions they make on you, and if you don't rebut those presumptions, then they assume they're true. So, you know, as you advance in your studies, these things mean more to you, and they mean less to you also in at the same time, because you can understand them. And at least you have an answer for them. And, you know, the other thing is I don't believe they're ever, ever going to tell you in open court, the reason that we're doing this to you is because you signed your name in all caps, or because you did this, or because you didn't rebut our presumption that you were a corporation and stuff. They won't do that, because if they did that, I'm honest with you, I think these little things that they do make them feel better. You know, when Hitler took over, he made laws that said that it was legal for him to do certain things that he was doing against the Constitution. I think most of it makes them feel better. And it makes their minions do their job, you know, these judges, and they tell them, well, you know, they entered into a contract, like an adhesion contract or something like that. You know, because you signed something and you didn't read the small print, or you know, those are called adhesion contracts. You know, when the electric company gives you electric, it's like a contract, because it's not really a contract. The adhesion contract is the easiest one to beat, because they have to prove their end of the contract, because there was no meeting of the mind. Basically, if you can't cross something out and send it back and negotiate it, it's not a contract. So what they do is they try to get you, because the fact that you took the service, or you cast a check, or whatever it is that they're doing, you know, that's how they try to establish, you know, a contract. And I basically had a successful fight with a credit card company, because they couldn't produce the contract, and I stuck to my guns, and I said, you know, when there's no contract, I don't have any, you don't have anything with my signature on it, and I kept sticking to my guns, and they kept giving me stupid answers, and eventually the judge got tired of it, and he found for me, and he ruled with prejudice. Doesn't happen very often, especially when you're going up against a big company like, you know, like Citibank or one of those, you know. And so you just have to know these things, you know.
Yeah, I just wonder if it's a, you know, abomination, if they're using something that I am filled with the Spirit with, you know, and they're using this in the wrong way. That was my question to NLA.
And you know what? I think you're probably right in that sense, and I wasn't aware of that. But just think of the tools that the devil uses. He's trying to take God's creation and recreate it in his own image and likeness, and he wants to sit in the seat where God and make himself God, right? So these are all probably little tricks that he uses in order to make himself, you know, to raise himself above God, you know. And it starts with, you know, and the whole system is built like that. And you know, it's you know that it has a kind of a supernatural twist to it, because I don't think a man could come up with these plans and make them last for hundreds of years. You know, it's definitely has a power behind it that is superhuman, you know. and diabolical. It's all diabolical, and he's got lots of little tricks, but you know, it's just that you can shine light on this garbage. You know, when you shine the light and you use God's words against him, he fizzles away in the dark. You know what I mean? He just fizzles away because he can't stand to the truth. So, you know, like Brent said tonight, what makes a man a leader is because he lives in the truth. And that's how you battle these things. You live in the truth and you speak simply and plainly. And, you know, even in the Bible it says, unless you become like a child, you can't enter heaven. Well, what's a child do? He cuts you to the quick. There's no, you know, he tells it like he sees it. And that's the joy of a child, listening to a child, because they're pure and they're not tainted. And when a child says, he has no clothes, look, the king is naked, I don't know what you're talking about, all of a sudden everybody realizes how stupid they are. And basically they keep doing that. They're naked. They have no clothes, you know. The only thing they have right now is a mask. So, anyway, I agree with you. I think that there's probably a whole lot more to it that I don't know about and that the average person doesn't know, but these are interesting things that, you know, I wouldn't go crazy with it, but it's good to know because it fortifies you in the way you act and the way you talk. And if you know these things, it gives you even that much more confidence to speak with authority, so to speak, you know what I mean, with truth.
And Gerard, the reason I revisited this this N. Legis thing is it is in Black's Law, 4th edition, and I was surprised it was in there, and I thought it referred to as all caps, but it says to a creature of the law, an artificial being.
Well, we had a little tape in there that went through all the different ways of signing and the different, you know, there's some of them are more sovereign and then there's less sovereign, you know what I mean, of ways of signing your name. And more corporate. And I mean, that was years ago when we put those tapes out that talked about, you know, the straw man and all this stuff, because that was when we were discovering this stuff, you know what I mean? And there's a very good tape about the different forms of signing your name and what it means when you sign it like that. And, you know, I know that our forefathers knew a lot more of that stuff than we did, you know, because they were more learned than we were, you know. And like you said, you know, Black's Law, it does have that stuff in there, so there is a certain legal connotation to it. And look, you know, just look at how when you pray, a prayer is you know, well, the way Christ taught us to pray in the Our Father, it's kind of set up almost like a legal briefing. Because you have the case, and then you have the pleading, and then you have your wherefore clause, basically, to God. That's how we speak to him. Wherefore, O Lord? You know, we give our case, we beg of him these things, and we put the wherefore clause in. It's amazing that, you know, this thing runs through everything, you know? So, I agree. There's some deeper learning that what goes there, and as the light bulb goes off in people's heads and we become enlightened, at some point we're going to understand all of it. And there's so much of it, it's crazy. It's ridiculous. If you had to fight each one of these things, I mean, this is a gargantuan Goliath task to take on this evil that has been running basically unfeathered for hundreds of years almost, you know, but it's gotten real bad in the past 100 years anyway, and it's exponentially worse, you know, from even 50 years ago. Look at the changes we have in 50 years in this country. It's like you can't even imagine 50 years ago where we are today.
Well, Gerard, did you live through them removing the prayer? Remember we used to pray in grade school?
Oh, yeah,
Through that? Where was the The clergy at? Where were the
Well, how'd they get away, you know, with it? There was a guy that came over from France that I think his name was Bastiat, and he wrote a book called The Law, and he said that the strength of America wasn't in its ports and in its amber waves of grain and all this other stuff. He said the strength of America was in the pulpits. because they were preaching one nation under God, and that's what he saw, that the people were, and our forefathers, I don't remember if it was who it was, he said, this constitution is only for a moral and religious people, and he used those words. So, that's where I'm at. I mean, if you read, and our forefathers read all these philosophers and things, they understood all this stuff. So, that's one of the planks of the Communist Manifesto was to lower the morals and destroy the family, and they've certainly done good at that, you know. But well, we got to move on here.
I'm trying to get my pastor to look. He said he would look more into this because it was a substitute pastor that presented this really informative information during his service, and so we're going to try to look into this and find out more about what that is an abomination.
If you really want to make your pastor, ask him why if he has a 501(c). Ask him why.
Does not.
Oh, that's good, because you can't serve two masters, and that's the next thing. That's the next.
No.
Okay.
No way.
All right, I won't go there, but you know what I mean, right?
I mean, absolutely. I know what you mean.
Okay.
Hey, good night. I just wanted to touch base with you on that, because I thought it's very important. We have some people in NLA will research this, too.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, good night.
Good night. Okay, Walt from New York. You are on deck.
Yes, Gerard. First time talking to you. Nice meeting you, sir. You were talking a little while ago about the mask business.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a show on every Sunday out of Austin, Texas on the Internet. It's especially for this whole vaccine issue. It's been on for a couple of years at least.
Mm-hmm.
And the host name is Sean Siegel. I think the name of the show is A Matter of Trust.
Mm-hmm.
And the radio station is Logos Radio Network, or it used to be called Rule of Law. And you could find
it. Oh, I'm familiar with that, yes. Logos Network.
Now, the show, I'm in Arkansas right now, temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
The show starts, I think, around noontime every Sunday. And the first 2 hours of the show are pre-recorded from the previous week, the previous Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last 2 hours, I think it's at least 4 hours long every Sunday. The last 2 hours is live.
And what time zone?
Eastern.
Eastern, okay.
Now, he has stuff on there that's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you what he said about the mask. He's very well, very knowledgeable in the things I'm hearing. Here's one thing. When you wear that mask, Gerard, if you could get the equipment they have in the emergency room and in hospitals, you know that, like that little clothespin, they check your oxygen level on your finger?
Yeah, you can buy them at Walgreens. They're about, about 50
good.
Bucks.
I think I might get one if it's not too expensive.
Yeah.
Your oxygen level is going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
It'll go down worse and worse, and then you're going to be holding in the CO2. You're not releasing it. So it's backing up in your blood. Now, here's the problem with that. So this is not a matter of a health issue why they want you to wear it, because it's all a lie. And when you hear what they say in that show, you won't believe it. But here's what happens. Your CO2 level goes up. Your oxygen goes down. And then what happens is your pH drops below the level where you're healthy, below 7. And you depend, everybody's different. You become more and more acid, Gerard. Now watch what happens when you become more and more acid. The people who are severely acid end up with a heart attack in the emergency department.
Right.
The first thing they do when you have a heart attack in the emergency department, every hospital in this nation, they'll give you an IV and it's got liquid baking soda in there to raise your pH again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, also, what happens is not only could you possibly get a heart attack in extreme cases if you're really using that for a long time and you're an older person or something, you also create an acid condition. It's going to cause all kinds of illnesses when you're in an acid condition, not just a heart attack. So that's why wearing a mask is not really beneficial. It's not going to help you like that.
No, and if you're in poor health to begin with, you're going to go down quicker. And you're right. Acidity.
That thing from the drugstore, you know, to check your oxygen, you'll see.
Yeah,
it's not
yeah.
good to wear that.
And it also captures moisture more. And what happens is you end up with pathogens in there, molds, mildews, and the germs that your body's exhaling, because that's one of the ways your body, that's part of your immune system, is your exhalation. And and the way they're understanding the immune system now is when somebody breathes or coughs on you that has picked up a pathogen in their body, whether they, however they got it from a vaccine or whatever, when they breathe it out, that thing that they're calling a virus, that's something that came out of the cell and it's encapsulated with a wall around it. And when you breathe it in, what you have is you have that same virus in a weakened state. That is a vaccination. That is a natural vaccination, and that raises our herd immunity. By putting the mask on and keeping everybody inside and social distancing, what they're doing is they're lowering our herd immunity, and Fauci absolutely knew that. That's why he was so confident we were going to have a second wave when everybody came out, because it was created by him, by the social distancing and the masking. So, you know, look, at that guy needs to hang. I don't care. He's a murderer.
Well, there's two things, too. If when you listen to that show, Gerard, you're going to enjoy it. Two things I want to say real quick. I hope I remember both the things. In 2015, they have on that show there, or on Logos Radio Network, Rule of Law, they have people on there talking about Fauci, that doctor there.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2015, they had this lab over here in America where they were messing around with that COVID-19 virus, okay? And they were turned in. I don't know what branch of government they were turned into, and it was unlawful what they were doing, so they banned it. They shut it down in this country, and they moved it over to China. So the whole thing, they started the problem. Now they're going to give us another solution, the vaccine, which is very bad. And I'm going to tell you, here's what I want to remember. They had on that show or another one, it's on the same network, live statements within the 4th of July weekend by this controversial man, Louis Farrakhan. I listened to him. He's very interesting. He came right out and accused Bill Gates and his wife of genocide. And he says, you're not going to do it. And he told all the black people in the world, do not take their vaccines.
Look, at Bill Gates is not welcome in Africa. They will arrest him and hang him. He has killed more people.
Also, what I heard too, Gerard, is here's what happened. Mm-hmm. He went over to Kenya, Bill Gates.
Yeah.
And he convinced the government or the president that all the children should get vaccinated for polio. This is recently.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened since, Gerard, is 400,000 children are paralyzed, Gerard.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes on and on, what they're doing with
you. Yeah, it's disgusting. Now, I want to tell you the rest of the story. You got it, but there is kind of a rest of the story. Back in the early 90s, America and I think it was like 160 countries signed a treaty that said we would never use biological or chemical weapons as war. And eventually, what happened is they started building these bio-level 4 labs, and what it was is they're building them in the universities. That's where they train everybody, the doctors, the scientists. Obviously, they go into the universities. Now, the universities, they are very susceptible to the people giving them money. Well, China is funding these universities. They're putting in these illegal, you know, the only reason to have a bio-level 4 lab is to weaponize something. You don't need that for normal research on medicine or even vaccinations. You don't need a bio-level 4 lab means that you're doing DNA splicing. You're doing, you know, stuff that Monsanto does, you know, Franken medicine, basically. So apparently there was enough stink made about it. It got found out that there were many of these bio-level 4 labs. One of them was in the University of North Carolina, and they had invited over these Chinese scientists there because they got a big grant and they got a big donation from these guys. And so when they finally said, well, America said, we know there's these bio-level 4 labs. We can definitely enforce that treaty within the United States. It's going to be harder to, you know, you're not going to go over to China and say you violated the treaty, take your lab down, because that's a big deal, right? But they banned them here in the United States. So they took the research, packaged it all up, sent the virus that they were working on back to Wuhan with these two Chinese scientists that were there the whole time, and they got major money over the years that they were doing it that was donated to them, plus our tax dollars. And what Fauci did was Fauci diverted $3.7 million that the WHO took in, the World Health Organization, and sent it to that lab where this virus was worked on and escaped from, either, I believe, on purpose because the timing of it was perfect for what was going on. So he is part and parcel the guy that we can point to, him and Bill Gates and their crew there, and his wife. I don't know if you know who Fauci's wife is, but it's disgusting. I told people to go on to Amazing Polly. She draws lines, and this woman is the head of the ethics, the bioethics on human experimentation. And I think that her and him are only as a marriage of convenience because they're both working in this field of vaccination and diseases. And when it comes time to take them to court, they can't testify against each other. And I think that's the only reason they're married, I think, is a marriage of convenience, you know. But anyway, I got it.
Real quick, Brad, about this on that show.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that are other shows that are on that same network. In the mid-1950s, Brad, I think you're old enough to know this, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
We had a polio problem, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
So they came out with a Salk vaccine, and the year after they came out with that vaccine, the polio diagnosis dropped dramatically. But here's what really happened, Gerard. People don't know this. All they did was, there's say up to a dozen different major symptoms you had when you got polio. You didn't have to have all the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
They just took the major symptom of polio, which is total paralysis. They left that alone. So if you had that, you got polio, right?
Right.
The other 10 or 11 symptoms, they just renamed them different diseases. And
yeah, MS and all these ones we have, yeah.
Yeah, it's not gone at all. Now, here's what they really made that vaccine for. You're going to hear it on the show. You can call in and talk to the people, okay? We didn't really have a cancer problem in this country. Right after that, that's when cancer started developing in this country, Gerard. And here's the doctor. He just came out with a movie, or he's coming out with it on July 8th. The most controversial doctor in the world over vaccines, Gerard, is Dr. Wakefield. I heard him live yesterday on Alex Jones or another show like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about his new movie, and here's what he said. It's so bad, the vaccines, Gerard. He says, we're down to now 1 out of 20 boys, because of all these vaccines they get, the little kids, they're all autistic, 1 out of 20. And he says it's going to come down to, in a few more years, that every child's going to be autistic. And what the goal is, Gerard, one of the goals is, so you can't have a standing army. There won't be no men to stand in the army to defend the nation. But I'll stop there. It was nice talking to you.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's either going to, on the internet, you'll find it under Rule of Law Radio or the Logos Radio Network about noontime or 1 p.m. Eastern. You'll find it on the internet. And also, everybody listen here, there's a phone number you can call if you don't have computers, and I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And the number you call to listen to that show is area code 605-475-5730. Like I said, the first 2 hours, though, is recorded from the week before. So if you want to call in, there's another number, but you have to wait till at least 2 hours, and he comes on live. And then there's another phone number you can call to participate on the show.
Right.
Nice meeting you, Gerard. I'll talk to you down the road.
Okay. Thanks a lot for that.
All right. Good night, sir.
Yep. Okay. We have Jay from North Carolina. How you doing, Jay?
Hey, how you doing, Gerard? I'm doing okay. You know, you said to that last caller about herd immunity.
Mm-hmm.
I actually heard Fauci say, I hope we don't hit herd immunity before we can get this vaccine ready.
Exactly.
I heard Fauci say that.
Well,
but anyways, okay, go ahead.
No, I was what Ocasio said. We can't let it go away too soon because Trump will win.
Yeah. I just sent you an email a couple minutes ago with a no trespassing sign.
Okay.
This is a sign that I have at my house to that woman that was talking about, you know, the no trespassing sign and the
right. Yeah.
Okay. This is what it says. It says legal notice, no trespassing. And this is like a highway sign. This is like a metal sign that's highly reflective, and it's black and white.
Right.
It says legal notice, no trespassing. To all persons, officers, and government agencies, including but not limited to the federal offices of the IRS, DOJ, ATF, HUD, environmental, health, social services, social service workers, and other unconstitutional agencies, and to all other local members of planning and zoning boards. Title 18, USC 241 and 242. Title 42, USC Section 1982, 1983, 1985, and 1986. Warning. You are hereby given notice of the following federal criminal law. If two or more persons conspire to injure, oppress, threaten, intimidate any citizen in the right, in the free exercise of enjoyment of any right or privilege secured to him by the Constitution or laws of the United States, or because of his having so exercised the same, or if two or more persons go in disguise on the highway or on the premises of another with intent to prevent or hinder his free exercise of enjoyment of any right or privilege so secured, they shall be fined not more than $10,000 or imprisoned not more than 10 years, or both. And if death results, they shall be subject to imprisonment for any term of years or for life. Land use fee, $5,000 per person, per day, or any portion thereof.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's a good, that's pretty good. And
I bought 10 of those signs. I still have 3 of them on my property, and I have had an official looking car with a computer mounted on the car come up to that sign, sat there for a minute, and then they backed out of my driveway and never came to the door.
Well, that's good. So it's in my email. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, I sent you that on an email to Gerard at what's your email?
Did you send it to Gerard at NLA?
No.
Or did you send it to Gerard 53?
Gerard 53.
Okay, yeah, okay. So it's in there. Yeah. I'll check it out. Thanks.
Yeah, but that sign, I bought, like I said, I bought 10 of them. They were like $20 a piece. And we should put a link to that on our on the website.
Yeah, we should. Maybe NLA can get a little kickback. We'd be a distributor.
where I got them was a place called, I believe it's Right Way Sign.
Okay.
I'm not at home right now, but I can tell you when I get home what the manufacturer is, because it's printed right on the sign there. Right.
Right. Yeah, I had a buddy of mine that got those here and put them on his property a few years ago when they were trying to take his house. But anyway, I was familiar with it, but I didn't know where he got them or anything else. So, and he's not around anymore. He had to leave.
I just ordered them off the internet. Now, this link that I just sent you is actually just a picture of the sign. I don't think it's a place where we can order it from.
Oh, well, maybe you can get me that information and drop it in there too when you get home.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. But,
I'd be interested.
That's an awesome sign. I was at a guy's house once, and he goes, "Hey, did you see that sign at the end of my driveway?" And I read it on the way out, and I'm like, "Oh my God, I gotta have one of those." And I bought 10 of them for $20 a piece.
Okay. Well, that's good. Always good to hear from you, Jay.
All right.
Okay, take it easy. We're kind of out of time here.
Yep,
I'm gonna
bye,
take.
Everybody.
Good night. Good night, Jay. God bless. Thank you. I got a wireless caller there. I give you a few minutes. I don't know. You're a 302 number. No name.
Oh, hi. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah. What's your first name and the state you're calling us from?
My name's Henry Freeman from Colorado.
Okay.
I'm actually a truck driver, so I'm in New Mexico right now. But I have a concern, actually. My concern is I've been going through court, and I've been facing these guys for quite a bit of time, and I've noticed that there's these contracts that the Title 4D services are contracted out with the local police department, courts, county and civil. And I think it was 2 years ago I had asked a police officer, I'd walked up to him and I said, hey, if you were called to if you were called to either arrest or whichever to an individual that was going to suppress his constitutional rights, would you actually carry out your order even though it was infringed upon his rights, or how would you handle that? And he said, well, if it's in a computer, then that's what we go by. And I said, even though you took an oath to protect the Constitution. And he didn't say anything. I said, but you did take a Constitution oath, right? And he said, yeah. And I said, but you're going to follow the computer? You're our first line of defense. So my question is I've been watching Carl Miller quite a bit, and I've been learning a great deal about the Constitution. I recently just joined you guys' site and whatnot. If the police departments do not follow their oath, and the courts, the local county and civil, does not follow the Constitution, what do we have today?
You have nothing. That's exactly why we're doing what we're doing, because they're not under the rule of law. They're under this new corporate thing, basically. That's why we've had cases in the past where the judge says, I don't want to talk about the Constitution in here. There's no Constitution in here. And the reason that a judge feels comfortable saying that is because they've got them brainwashed that this stuff that they're doing is all about equity and contract law, that basically you've acquiesced and you've given them permission, and so therefore they have control over you, they have jurisdiction. And that's why the first thing that John says to do is challenge jurisdiction, because they have to prove it. They can't just say they have it, they have to prove how they have jurisdiction. And under the Constitution, they don't have jurisdiction. But, you know, you're going to have a hell of a fight, because we've been there, we've been there, done that. And we know how that goes, and that's why we ended up with a lot of the paperwork that we have in the federal court, you know, because they absolutely don't follow the Constitution. Now, if you can get something up to the Supreme Court, they're, you know, first of all, they don't have to take it, but they have to have some kind of semblance that looks constitutional up on the top, and they can't completely contradict the rulings that they've made already. Now, there's a lot of good Supreme Court rulings that are part of, you know, the record. So, you know, when you go into federal court, you know, if you got a good case, first of all, they won't take something that's going to upset the apple cart, basically. They keep kicking it back down to the lower court because the judges don't want it in there, because they don't want to be responsible. And that's one way of winning your case, is by putting the judge on the line so that he's actually got to, you know, blatantly deny a fundamental right, you know, in order to get you. So if you can signal him that you're going to take it there and that you understand it and you're going to take it to the end, you might get a good resolution out of your case. But it's, you know, most of the time they end up getting you, and they end up having you spend money, and they always end up getting, you know, do this plea bargaining, because they wear you down to the point where you just don't have the time, the wherewithal, or the money to deal with them, and that's the problem. I mean, they're doing an awful lot of plea bargaining today, and innocent people are pleading out just to try to get free from them, you know, and it's disgusting. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that'll be over shortly here when we get these, you know, subversive judges out of there, because the judge is the strong man. You need, you know what I'm saying? The judge is holding that system up, and that's why they're so protective of the judges, because they're ruining people's lives, you know, by not following the Constitution. And it's very hard, and you really got to know what you're doing to get them there. You know, I mean, you can do it if you can not give them jurisdiction, and you know how to operate. And you know, and the worst one is, like John says, is the IRS, because they change jurisdictions on you midstream. You don't know what court you're in by the time they get done with you. You know what I mean? And they can they can switch jurisdiction midstream. And if you don't know what's, if you're not a savvy on what's going on, they will get you. You know, and with no explanation. You know, so.
Well, I've actually been wondering if I should switch over from county or civil, because this is a Florida case, but Texas picked it up, and, you know, I filed paperwork with my employer, and, you know, they stopped, you know, seizing my funds, and I haven't heard anything from Texas, because I've mailed them a affidavit, so they left me alone. But my thing was, okay, so now I'm down to Florida, which is where the case originated,
mm-hmm.
but I do not trust these guys. So should I leave it where it's at or move it over to federal, even though there's no monetary set? Because I think a federal, what is it, like a $70,000 or something like that? But there's still the question of federal.
Is this an income tax case? Is that what you're talking about?
No, it's a Title 4D child support, which is basically the welfare recoupment.
Yeah.
They disguise it as child support, but, you know, Supreme Court has ruled that the child support is unconstitutional, and it's not even child support because it has no welfare of the children.
Right.
So,
right.
So that's where I'm at. But I cannot stop thinking that there has to be a line where, if there's these contracts that the Title IV-D has made with the local police departments, the attorneys, because that's why people can't find attorneys that will fight child support, because they're all in on it. So
the judges and the attorneys may be getting kickbacks. You're right. I don't, you know, and look, if you have to use an attorney, then you're not going to get anywhere anyway. Now, what I will tell you is you can always move it to federal court for cause. And so my advice most of the time is to take your swipes at them in the lower courts to try to get it resolved, you know. And you can, if you know what you're doing and you can navigate, you can do that. But at any time, you can challenge a jurisdiction, or you can go after the fact that I'm sure they deny you due process all over the place, and that's what the federal court will take on. And things are going to get better.
That's my biggest thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's as time goes on, there's been a lot of these federal judges have been replaced, and there's going to be a lot more of them replaced as this whole pedophilia thing goes down. So there should be some pretty new good judges up there. So I can't advise you whether to move it or now or when to move it. I just know that, you know, you probably get one chance to bring it into the federal court. And I would do the best I could down on the state court level, you know, if you know how to hold their feet to the fire with that, because they, you know, they definitely don't have the jurisdiction, and they're definitely violating your, you know, your due process. And you could fight those claims in a state court, and the state court can give you remedy if they want to. I mean, it's tough because, you know, it's like, the state's not going to fix the state normally, but it happens. Sometimes you get, I got relief in a state Supreme Court, you know? So I'm not saying that it can never happen if you present the case the right way and you watch your P's and Q's. So you can always bail out to the federal court, you know, which sometimes just doing that alone is enough for them to leave you alone, because they don't want to go in there and operate themselves, you know?
Right.
So,
well, my last question, and I do appreciate your time on this. My last question is reaching, I was thinking deeper on this of what I'm going through, what's been happening, and the whole thing that's going on around the states and how they've contracted everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is there a point in time, looking back on our right to travel that's being violated. All these things that the police departments are doing that's unconstitutional. Is there a point in time where the people, we all stand up and sort of take things, I'd hate to say it so harshly, but into our own hands and say, hey, we need to go back to the way things were, the way things were intended? Or do you think we'll never get to that point?
No, well, that's what we're hoping, that we are going to get to that point. And if there was only a time in history that it's possible, it is now, because basically I believe that that's where Donald Trump and the military intelligence that's helping him want to get back to. They want to get back to that Constitution before 1789. You know what I mean? They want to get back to the rule of law. And if we actually move things back to that, all that stuff's going to go poof, and it's going to go away like dust, you know. And they know that. And you know, they're making a lot of money from this. It's all about the money, basically. It's all about, you know, keeping us locked down and having all of us work for them. Basically, it's slavery. And if you're a white male and you're in court, you're the lowest. You know, it's not the blacks anymore. It's a white American male. I mean, talking about what they do for child support and that you're a target, and you have a job, so you know they actually got something they can go against. You know, if you're just a vagrant, you know, they're not going to get blood from a stone, and you know the only way they're going to pick you up and put you in jail is if they're low on prisoners in some private prison. They'll take you because they get federally funded for that. You know what I mean? But
right.
Ultimately, it's a sick system that needs to go away. And, you know, you can't even fix it. You need to just eliminate it. It's crazy. You know. So
I was sort of thinking that when they're giving away these checks, mm-hmm. that they're not just going to give away all these checks and not expect something on the back end. So like the child support, for example. Yeah, the recipient is getting money, but on the other end, the person like myself, we're feeding that system. So with these free checks that people are getting, it's just another means for them to get free money. But in the end, they're going to say, okay, you're getting this money, but now somebody has to go to work or do this or do that. And
absolutely.
Next thing you know, it's mandatory. So now you're stuck in your house. And you have to pretty much be a slave if you want that check.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think
know
that's,
it's a stretch, but
they're doing a lot of things, but their days are numbered. And I really believe that a lot of the stuff that Trump is giving away, that there's a method to his madness, because he knows the system is going away. And what he's doing is he's putting the money out there. And they're buying the bonds back because he's setting up a parallel system. So basically, he doesn't care about, you know, he's using those checks to take their system down, basically. And they're never, and if everything works out right, they'll never get a return off of, like you're saying. And I'm sure that they would normally have plans to do that, but I don't believe that that's why Trump did it. I think Trump's doing it to break the bank. I mean, he's already absorbed the Federal Reserve into the Treasury, which makes him the head of it, the CEO. He's the executive officer now of our money, of the Treasury, because it's no longer, the Federal Reserve no longer has control over it. And technically, he's the most powerful man in the world right now. People don't realize this, because the American dollar is the reserve dollar. And they wanted to this whole virus thing was designed to take our money and bring it and let China become the world's reserve currency. Well, he's kind of put the kiboshes on that. That's not going to happen. And we can already see that. So I'm very, very optimistic about the way things are going. And there's a plan here that he hasn't revealed, but by his actions, I can see, you know, look at who's the king of bankruptcy. It's him. And you know, in a fiat money system, you know who ends up being the banker? The guy with the most debt. So what's Trump doing? He's going to get the whole world owing us money because we're under control.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So that's all I'll say.
Okay,
we're way, way over time, but I'm glad we talked. And it just, you know, you got to think outside the box, you know what I mean? And that's the way he thinks. That's why I like him. Sometimes I got upset with him because I see him doing stuff, and I'm like, what are you doing with that guy? He's no good, and this no good. But he turns around, and I see why he was doing it. So it's like I try to never jump to conclusions with him, you know? Anyway.
I think you said he was going to go back to the gold and silver. Is that really a possibility?
Absolutely.
We'll really see that day?
Yeah. They got a technology now where they're weaving the gold into the paper money, where it's actually in the paper. And what's going to happen is it's going to be worth so much because they got so much, you know, this fiat money system has created all this false wealth. But, you know, it's not going to take all that much gold and silver to offset that. But you're actually going to get dollars and whatever that have gold threads in them. If you put them in the microwave, the gold will bleed out of them, like, you know what I mean? So.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Yeah, Kennedy tried to go back to the gold standard, if I remember correctly.
Yes, he did, and that's why he's pushing up daisies. But, you know, Trump also was very close to his son, you know, John JFK Jr., and I do believe that this whole thing that you're seeing today was planned way back over 20 years ago, because John Jr., you know, vowed to avenge his father's death. And there's some other stuff out there. He put that George magazine out before he died, and on the cover of that, there's a lot of cryptic stuff. So there's going to be big surprises as far as what's going on, I think. Anyway, I'm not going to get into that. We're way over time, so it's been interesting, and we can talk about it again sometime, okay? But thank you very much.
Yeah, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Have a good night. And I think we left Dan from Carolinas, but I'll have to catch him next week because we're like a half hour over almost. So thank you, everybody. God bless. Keep the faith and keep your powder dry, okay? See you here next week.
All right.
Okay, bye.